Welcome to the Solar Storm. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, and this is September 14th, 2014. Thank you so much for joining me here at RenegadeBroadcasting.com. Please check out all of the other great hosts here on the network. We have a live show every night of the week and have had some spectacular shows recently, so good job to all of the folks on the network and all of the callers. I also want to thank the people who have donated to me recently and in general, and people who have contributed to RenegadeTribune.com, people who post to AlternativeSocial.com. But I really do appreciate those out there who have donated something, and in particular a few people recently. Thank you very much for all of your support, all of you out there, even if it's just leaving a comment and saying a kind word. It is all appreciated. Tonight, I have a returning guest, Mr. Robert Ransdell. He is running for U.S. Senate in Kentucky. His campaign is, "With Jews, We Lose." That's his slogan. He's putting up on a bunch of signs. He's going to be having a radio show, 7 one-hour-long radio shows on an AM station that's also getting broadcast online, so you'll be able to listen to that. I just may stop by at some point as well. So it's all very exciting. He's able to get invitations to a lot of different events and will be doing all sorts of activism because he is running for U.S. Senate as a write-in candidate. And so that's what we'll be hearing about tonight. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kyle. Great to be back on. And yeah, we're definitely ready to raise some hell down here and take a stand for our people. And in doing so, of course, to take a stand for our people, we have to stand against the enemy. And we're going to be doing the same thing simultaneously. And great to be on the show tonight. Just to kind of extend something that you had said, you know, saying that you appreciated the donations. Just wanted to make it clear to the audience out there, those who do are good enough to donate to Kyle, that it was because of him basically approaching me, taking the initiative that the campaign now has a website that was, put together by Kyle. So, you know, when you're donating to this individual, it's someone who really cares about helping others out as far as with, you know, just someone who deserves the help. You're going to get a return on your donation as far as furthering our ideals and our principles. And I just want to say, Kyle, here on the air, I really appreciate your help with that.
Well, you're quite welcome, and I appreciate your comments. People can go check out that website at www.whiteguard.us, and that is your official campaign site. Now, so people can learn about the Robert Ransdell for U.S. Senate campaign and learn why With Jews We Lose by going to whiteguard.us. And we'll be talking tonight about your campaign, about the White Guard, its origins, and also where things might go from here. But there's a lot that we can get into just dealing with the campaign alone and what your campaign allows you to do in terms of activism, the doors that it opens. But before we even get to that, Robert, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself? This is just, let's keep this brief because we want to get to the heart of the matter, but what you've been involved with over the years. You appeared in the Renegades in America documentary in part two, and people have seen you there. They've heard you on the show. They've seen you around. But I just want them to know a little bit of that, just where you're coming from and how long you've been involved in the struggle.
Well, I've been within the white nationalist struggle, fight, political arena, however you want to term it, for about 10 years now. Joined the Alliance, National Alliance, in 2005 and resigned in 2012. Up until about 2012, I wasn't really even really active on the internet. It's always been kind of a gung-ho, I was the local unit coordinator of the Cincinnati unit of the NA, and just a number of activities that, and different things that we achieved here as far as really, you know, taking it to the public, you know, not feeling as if we needed to have any kind of hesitation about furthering our ideals and taking them to the public. A number of different times we've, basically been attacked by the media for our work, whether it be a meeting that that we held at the Boone County Library using a library, a meeting room, and calling on the public, as well as, some members of the Alliance at the time to basically discuss some issues relative to the problems non-white immigration were causing here in this particular area here in northern Kentucky. The rally that we had in 2012 for Pat Mahaney, a white victim of black mob violence, mob violence.
And you mentioned this in the documentary. Can you just tell the folks out there listening what happened to one of the people who ended up killing this man? Because it was a year later, but he did die from these injuries. Go ahead.
It was more than just that. Sorry, Kyle. It was more than just one of them. There were I think there were two of them that were actually given book reports as their punishment for beating this guy. He died less than a year later. His injuries were just absolutely horrible, brutal to look at. The pictures of this man after he was beaten, and it ranged from book reports to probation. The judge actually that gave those so-called punishments is a judge by the name of Tracy Hunter, who right now is in the news in Cincinnati. Now she's a defendant in a case where she's just typical black corruption. She is said to have misappropriated funds and improperly used the credit cards. They're basically going after her for all kinds of improprieties as a judge, but yet none of the white prosecutors or anyone within the government are doing anything or said anything when it came to treating these black perpetrators in this case with kid gloves. On top of that, just very briefly, she actually called for them to have mental evaluations or counseling because of the media uproar over their case, that she was concerned about how that affected their mental state. And and there were two of them. Two of them were twins, and I don't even know if it's limited to two. It might have been a couple others, but I know for a fact two of the six that were involved have been in other incidents since where they've been arrested for violence against, I think it was against, people more their age, probably fellow blacks. But, that was...
Well, they didn't do nothing. They didn't do nothing. She didn't do nothing. She's getting in some hot water now, but it's probably just the white patriarchy that is coming down on her and just making up lies. I heard she didn't do nothing. It's amazing. We've been seeing this ramping up at an incredible speed. You had this really start coming to the public attention with White Girl Bleed a lot, reporting on this phenomenon of black mob violence. And it's been going on for a while, but it's been getting crazy. This Memphis Kroger incident recently is just one example, with over 100 black youths out there causing trouble, being violent, and beating a white boy, as the person filming it, or white dude, as the person filming it, called the young white boy. He was, what, maybe 14? I forget the details here. But they just beat him to a pulp. And this happens all the time. It's not always mob violence, but that's very intimidating. No matter how big and strong you are, if you're alone, if you're out with your family, what are you going to do when hundreds of black teens are running wild? Not just teens, adults as well. It's very scary. It's a very scary situation that we're faced with here, and that's why I think the White Guard is so important. I hope this really becomes something of a viral idea. But please get back to the story you were telling here about your involvement in protesting against what was going on here with these teens, these black youths being made into the victims.
Well, let me actually kind of continue the discussion, kind of coming off with something you just said. I mean,
sure.
You know, the most outrageous thing is that no matter how violent and how many incidents of violence and how many incidents of disorder and incivility that we see with these so-called black youths, we are still told by the media that when one of them, whether it be with that Trey Boone Martin, whether it be with this one here recently in Missouri, that when they are a child, that essentially these blacks are supposedly harmless. That essentially, and where was that case where there was one, I think was 9 years old, recently was in the news. I saw on the message board, saw a link to a story where I think it was like a 9-year-old black stabbed a white kid to death. I don't know where this was at. It was somewhere. You know, this notion that we're told that supposedly that they have to get to a certain age before they're dangerous is just absurd. But one thing that I have noticed and really taken note of, especially with this Michael Brown thing in Missouri and the reaction by the black leaders, you know, I think that 10 to 15 years ago that, you know, the majority of blacks, that if some black guy was robbing a place or if they had, you know, just done something illegal and they were shot, I mean, most blacks would probably say, you know, yeah, I mean, that's what happens when that happens. You know, not that they are exceptional or known for taking responsibility, but I tell you, and it's a symptom. This is something we have to look inward. It is a symptom of our tolerating this, accommodating this, appeasing these blacks over and over again, and allowing these white leaders to get away with it without any kind of protest or any kind of condemnation that's more than just complaining on the internet, complaining on these comment boards, on these newspaper websites. Fact of the matter is that the blacks, we've got to realize and notice, they are becoming as arrogant. They are achieving a level of chutzpah that used to only be reserved for the Jews. Relative to the fact that we know the Jews, that no matter what they do, no matter how much of a role they play that is easily documented, that they constantly refuse responsibility for anything. When you have this Michael Brown's attorney, the family attorney coming off and saying after the release of that video, not even talking about the fact that the media is all so upset because we have some truth be presented about what might have been the character of this Brown, but the attorney gets on there and says he doesn't care about what this black man did before he ran into this officer and had the incident with the officer that led to him being killed. It shows you that they have absolutely no expectation of personal responsibility or of a cause and effect that their actions can bring upon when they are violent or illegal actions. They don't expect whites to do anything but tolerate them, lay back, be on their heels, let them do whatever the hell they want. And this is evident, too. I mean, there's a couple other stories that are – there was
can we stay on Ferguson for just a moment? Because even all the looting that took place afterwards was excused. The police were probably given orders to let it happen, but on a number of different occasions, they just stood back while blacks looted stores, it seems. And that could have been coming right from the top, Eric Holder saying, don't you touch those boys, they didn't do nothing. But I don't mean to imply that Eric Holder's at the top, but even the media, Fox News, came out and excused their actions. This blonde woman, Megyn Kelly, I think she's an anchor over at Fox, or at least a reporter, she was on Bill O'Reilly's show, and they were talking about these black youths, and she was saying that she'd been looking into this thing, white privilege, and you know what? There's a lot of facts to back this up. It seems white privilege is a reality, and Bill O'Reilly, at the end, he was kind of, throughout the interview, he was kind of, you know, playing a little bit of devil's advocate with her. But at the end, he says really quickly, oh, I agree with everything you've just said. So Bill O'Reilly, who's supposedly standing up for white folks over there in Fox News, right, the voice of reason for all of these kosher conservatives. He is agreeing with Megyn Kelly that white privilege is real and it's a problem. I've gone in, I've gone through all of the reasons why white privilege is complete bullshit, especially because we're the only race that is actively discriminated against through government policy because of the color of our skin. But there are many other examples why white privilege is a whole bunch of crap. But it's just amazing, Robert, to see how much the Jewish media is trying to get us to feel bad for these people who are going out and looting stores, causing all sorts of violence, throwing Molotov cocktails at the police. Oh, well, those police were, you know, overarmed anyway. Oh, they're militarized. Nobody's ever cried about militarized police before, and they've come out on a number of different occasions, like the ridiculous Boston bombing, martial law or whatever type of police powers that was. No, when these cops are armed against black youth, then it's a problem, because we don't want any of those poor boys who didn't do nothing getting hurt.
You know, CNN, if you watch them, they were it was just so obvious. They're bringing on specially and just saying that there's some people here trying to help, and, you know, they want to put on as many, you know, angelic faces. I mean, what we have to recognize, and I think that these Jew media bosses have to be in their offices probably just using all the racial epithets that have ever been invented, frustration about the fact that they never are able to find one of these supposed black saints that are shot down on the street that can ever not be found later on to have, you know, gang ties or be doing illegal stuff, drugs, preaching hatred toward white people. You would think that the law of averages, they would actually at some point find one that was actually what they tried to promote them at. And, you know, what's going on here, essentially, is the product of decades worth of coddling these blacks, of allowing them to just be accommodated over and over and over again. And, you know, as far as the managed kind of, you know, preaching that it's always, you know, has something to do with anything but just the fact that there is inequality between the races, that is racial, that there's nothing that you're going to be able to do about it, is what people can't, you know, can't or aren't going to grasp. I mean, in some cases, I mean,
well, we're meant to think that these are just isolated incidents. We have white criminals. That's what they say. There are white criminals. Why are you picking on the blacks here? Everybody commits crime. And obviously, if you bring up the FBI crime statistics, they'll just say, oh, well, that's because of socioeconomic factors. They're just poor. That's the problem. It's
a cultural thing that cannot be denied. I mean, when you know, not that you need TV to prove it, but they've got this show on TV. It's called Bait Car, and you know they have like set up a car for them to steal or whatever. And you know, if most white people in a white area, they see somebody, you know, trying to break in somewhere, or they see someone trying to steal someone's stuff, or witness a robbery, or see someone trying to break into a car, they're going to call the police. You're not going to have, like you do with these blacks, and it shouldn't take having to watch it on TV. You've got the entire neighborhood coming out. You have the entire neighborhood going in, coming through the car like vultures, like, you know, just jackals. And, you know, and these people who are they being subsidized by? This is their job. They're out there stealing your stuff, you know, assaulting our people, victimizing our people, robbing our people, while we pay for their housing, while we pay for their food, for their child care, everything.
Robert, did you see that news story about the iPhone app that was deemed racist? It was something about sketchy neighborhood watch or whatever, so to keep you out of the dangerous areas, by, you know, through using a GPS on your phone. And this news crew went out to report on this in D.C. They went to one of these sketchy areas, and they left their van for a little bit, and then they come back, and their whole van had been looted. So this racist app, because primarily the areas that they would tell you to avoid were majority black, it was deemed racist, but this was then proven to be right, proven to be useful. Avoid the groid, as some have said before.
There was another incident here that kind of, you know, goes to show this. There was an incident here near Cincinnati in Beaver Creek where this black guy was going through a Walmart, and it ended up being an air rifle, but he was, like, going around, I guess having a real fun time pointing this gun at people in the stores. And there was a guy that called the police, and the police got there and did not, you know, completely didn't acknowledge them and their request for him to put the gun down, and he shot. And now this has started something here locally that's been in the news a lot. It kind of went up the same time that Michael Brown thing did, and you know, they're going to have a federal investigation of this, and the media is all in an uproar because one of the cops is already back to work. And again, it goes to this conception by the media that there's absolutely no expectation of behavior or performance on the part of blacks. Now, I had briefly forgotten something I was going to bring up here, getting back to the media coverage and the response by the federal, Ferguson police, and something that a lot of people were taking note of. And this is something that probably most people listening to this show have some conception of, but the American public needs to really get it through their thick, you know, they were very, another thing we were hearing about was, the rights of the protesters there were being violated and that free speech rights were being violated, and now there's, you know, the ACLU is going to be suing them on behalf of, I guess, some people that didn't feel like they got very good treatment. And I personally love the way the police were dealing with the media there, because the damn media is there to paint a picture of black victimhood and is this an anti-white establishment? You know, I honestly think that's the way it needs to go, because they know they're going to be. Now I don't know whether they know it or not, or whether it was for safety or having for maintaining order, but they know that those cameras are there to paint them as these evil white racist cops that are you know coming down on the blacks that are protesting. Here's the deal: a lot of people are real concerned. I've heard a lot of chatter about all these. And it's been in the news even. I think Obama even has, like, some kind of, like, task force on investigating these use of military vehicles by the police. Now, I'm going to tell you something. The people in charge of this society know what is in store for this country if white people do not stand up against this anti-white establishment, stand up against non-white immigration, stand up against the dispossession of their land. This country is going to have more non-whites in it, and it is going to become third world. The only way you maintain a third world nation, as we see everywhere in this world, is through having hardline governments that are ready to deal with the violence that is always a threat to happening, the rioting, the incivility. And if white people out there don't realize that you are going to lose your freedom, that our liberties are going to be taken away, and it may not be for any other reason than the people in power are going to do whatever they have to do and have to do to be able to maintain order with this population, that we as a people, white people, majorities in our nations, maintain our society without these kind of heavy-handed government tactics. And the only way that you have order in these non-white nations, you see it, you saw it in Iraq, the only way they had any semblance of order is having a hardline SOB at the top of the thing, Saddam Hussein, that, or in Africa, and many number of countries in Africa where they have any period of stability at all. The only time they have that is when they have a hardline, violent dictator at the front, at the top. Because he's lording over a population that simply, it is not in their nature to carry on the business of a nation and carry on their daily lives, have things not work out their way, and then, you know, decide to go through other ways aside from violence. That's our way.
Robert, real quickly.
Destroying everything just because something happens, it's not the way you want it.
Yeah. Well, you have all of these different places around the world that used to be great and used to be white, and now they've fallen into the hands of the blacks or other non-whites, and they have become absolute hellholes. For example, Zimbabwe, which used to be Rhodesia, South Africa, which used to be the apartheid South Africa, and Detroit, which actually used to be a first world city. Places all over, almost all of the major cities in the Western world are now pretty much majority non-white. And we're still treated like the minorities. For example, in Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe came out and recently announced that white people either have to get out of the country or pretty much are going to be killed. And there's no media uproar. Not at all, actually. The media just loved that Nelson Mandela, who was completely genocidal against whites and sang songs about killing them. But no, they're going to come after us as the racist. Us who just want to protect our people and our way of life. Us who are the real patriots. They're going to come after us and say, we're just the most evil people on this planet because we just can't love everybody and get along. When they completely ignore a person who is saying that no white people are allowed in his country or else they're going to be killed. That's completely fine. He's not any kind of enemy to the U.S. No, this is progressive.
Well, the story of white Rhodesia, I think, is something that people in this country, whites out there, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, might be listening from Great Britain and might be a little bit more familiar with, obviously, because they have connections there. But the story of white Rhodesia, especially the years where they existed basically as a renegade state, and as recently as like the 1970s, here need to get. It wasn't that long ago, you know, when we had this in this little part of southern Africa, a state that was essentially wasn't ideal. I mean, they weren't necessarily, you know, they had, you know, still had blacks in the country. But they refused to go along with this era that was progressing and you know, not nearly as far along as it is now, but it was going this direction. And one thing I always point out to people all the time is that, you know, during that, around that same 20 to 25 year period, of course, with these wars happening before there, you know, the fact that this government here in the United States went to war in North Korea, in Korea, supposedly fighting against communism. They went to war in Vietnam, supposedly fighting against communism. Yet it was the communist-backed dictators, Soviet Union and China, backing Robert Mugabe. And what does this country do? Obviously, it's no question, because this is so overwhelmingly an anti-white establishment, an anti-white world run by the Jews for decades here. And the fact that we boycotted, it was Henry Kissinger, the Jew, goes down there to South Africa, and what the real death knell for Rhodesia that forced them into accepting handing the country over, even though, you know, they probably should have still stood out. But so much pressure was brought to bear through Kissinger going down and to South Africa and putting pressure on the South Africans to abandon their support of Rhodesia. You know, but the fact that we didn't come to the aid of people who we were supposedly fighting against communism, the Bush War that took place there, you had these whites in Rhodesia that were going to war with these communist rebels that were backed by China and by the Soviet Union with the Robert Mugabe, the dictator at the top who's still there. So,
And they were doing very well in Rhodesia. They were outnumbered, these whites, and they had some technological superiority, but mainly it was their will, their determination, and their organizational, military, and tactical knowledge that allowed them to hold on to power in the face of great hostility that was incited by communists. And you're right. We were supporting, we as the United States, we're supporting the communists while we are supposedly at war against communism in a Cold War.
The government took an outright stand, hostile stand by boycotting. But there were actually, now I haven't ever really been able to read into, but I do know that there were, they weren't massive numbers, but there were actually Americans and people, I think, from Australia and even Britain, other places that actually. There were Americans that actually went down there to fight along the side of the Rhodesians.
JB Campbell did that.
Yeah, and tactically, I mean, they were just so much better organized. But again, on what does that come from? I mean, it doesn't come from an unfair advantage. I mean, these blacks just were not fit racially. Their abilities to wage war. I mean, this is an example of a very small force of whites who held out. And Dr. Pierce talked about it once in an ADV broadcast, where essentially it was really the moral will of the Rhodesians that really, they really fell under this kind of liberal indoctrination that everything would be fine if they handed the country over, and they wanted to have the luxuries back that they had lost to these boycotts. But it wasn't, they weren't being overwhelmed militarily. I mean, they were holding their own and really prevailing over just forces that were being outnumbered and being boycotted and having the other side be financed by these communist superpowers, and they were just thwarting them almost militarily at every opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should take some lessons from that, because it seems like we're facing a similar situation here, Robert. So let's talk about the present day. We have your campaign that is seeking to raise awareness on a number of different issues, primarily the issue of the Jewish-run country in which we live, and in fact, the Jewish-run New World Order that is being implemented all across the world, the Jew World Order. So let's talk about how you think your campaign will be able to bring this message out to the public in a new and very interesting way.
Well, I maintain that the blacks are what they are. They are what they have always been, and that it is our people who have been affected in a negative fashion by anti-white propaganda, by guilt propaganda, and we have had our will to stand up for ourselves be sapped from us, and that hasn't been by the blacks. And we didn't wake up one day and just to say we're just going to give up our country. And it's been because, of course, as many people listening here are aware of, because of the pronged attack by the Jews, their control of our media, their control of our politicians, their stranglehold on our banking system and our economy through that. And it is time to just throw all the cowardice, just shake off the brainwashing. And show people, I intend to show people. I'm gonna go on the radio and just be absolutely this forthright about it, and ask people to say, the Jews control the media. Now, did you implode, or did you spontaneously combust just now? Did you fall over dead from cardiac arrest? No. I mean, the fact is, they have made us fear the truth. And it is not for a lack of information. Our people have some conception of what's going on. It is a matter of this Jewish establishment tyrannically, attacking people who stand for white interests, white people who stand up for their own people in the way other groups do. And there's no amount of recounting how hypocritical it is and how much of a double standard there is that's going to make these people care. These people aren't going to wake up one day and say, well, that's right. The whites are, if blacks, were to say this, they don't get in trouble on whites, so they say it and they do. Well, we need to rectify this immediately. They're not going to do it. We have got to start standing up and insisting that this state of affairs is not going to continue. And we're not going to do that through just complaining about it on the Internet. We need to put a face to it. We need to go up in their face, take them by the shirt collar, and say, your day is over, Jew. Now, what I'm, I tell you, there's one mode of thinking that I'm going to take it right to the people, and I'm going to take it to them just like this. I'm going to say, listen, you may not agree with, you may need to go verify whether or not the Jews control the media. You may not need to go verify the amount of control and manipulation power they have over our government, and how much of an absolute death grip they have on banking and the world, in this country and the world. The Federal Reserve is Jewish. It's not just a crappy banking system that is illegal to the Constitution, and let's talk about these safe things. It is a Jewish construct. But I'm going to go to the people and say, you need to hate this enemy.
because they think you are absolutely absent of any common sense whatsoever. They have absolute contempt common sense because they know that they can control you with the simple use of a word, that they can have you, that they can react to you having natural feelings of disgust and opposition for an anti-white system that preaches death and genocide for our people, that our people can be so frustrated at the outright hatred that this system preaches toward us, but yet they know that they can have you on a dime stop with a word. And I'm going to tell them, the people that I speak to on these radio shows, I'm going to be forthright and say, you know what, the Jews hate my guts, but they respect me, and they respect people like Kyle Hunt and everyone else who has free minds and who refuses to knuckle under to this crap. And the fact is that if you're going to hate them for any reason, if you don't believe me when I'm telling you, you got to go verify it. Just know that they have absolutely no respect for you. They see you as robots, as a goyim the religion tells them you are, because they have so little regard for your basic common sense. Okay? Now, what I want to stress to people is that as much as shows like this and the internet has been so effective, it's going to be something I hope that I can add people to our ranks, that we can get people visiting the various sites, listening to Renegade, or in some form or fashion, trying to find out the truth as to why our nation is in a decline and why we are where we're at, and they need to find that stuff out. But the fact of the matter is that to find these shows, it's at 5%. When I go onto the airwaves starting September 21st at 10 p.m. this next Sunday, I am going to have the airwaves where people who are driving their cars at night, they're going to be in, I think a large contingent of truck drivers are going to be out there. There's going to be regular people out there who may be too busy to even look for this. They might be busy, you know, raising their kids, raising their family. They hate this system just as much as us. They might not know the ins and outs and all the facts and everything, and I'm going to share some of the facts with them, but they don't need to know all the facts. They need to have a basic understanding of what's going on. And for once, like you mentioned, that Megyn Kelly and Bill O'Reilly, and boy, that's on Fox News. That's, as the leftists say, the racist news station. Yeah, right. It is the other side of the managed debate. We are going to have someone that not only gets on there and tells them what's wrong, they already know to a large extent what's wrong, but they're going to have someone who's going to tell them what the hell we need to do. And you mentioned the White Guard is one thing, is we can never expect this system to take credible action to protect our people in the streets. We can never expect the system to take credible action to deal appropriately with black rioters in the street. And it is up to us as whites to get out there and start developing on our own ways in which we can stand, and it comes down very simply to guts, to strength, to muscle, to fists, and when I say fists, I mean that we have every right to defend ourselves, and we have every right to defend our own. It has nothing to do with going out there and just openly targeting blacks that are not doing anything wrong. But what I'm with this White Guard idea, let me just briefly say, now I'll let you get in here, Kyle, but you know, the fact is, not only is this something that the term itself was devised by George Lincoln Rockwell, of course, all the riots that took place in the 1960s, the civil rights movement, by the communist-backed black leaders. Like, you know, there were rioters. Every time they go in these towns, they'd start rioting afterwards. Usually cameras would go off that, or, you know, if it would be, it would be, they'd put the cameras on long enough to get
racist police, yeah.
Using the fire hoses or whatever. Well, Rockwell devised the idea that we need to have white men in these cities, specifically from his party, his group, start setting up and protecting these people. I also take this idea even more so today. This isn't something that has been showed any effectiveness back then. Just showed effectiveness back then. We have seen the rise of nationalist parties in Europe, as many of us are aware of, and a few of those parties, such as Jobbik with the Hungarian Guard and the Golden Dawn, have risen to popularity. Some of the base reason that they have risen isn't because of some pamphlet they put in somebody's hand. and they agreed with it. It's because they have went out there and they have protected their people in the streets. They've escorted people to the bank or to the store where they've had these immigrants, all of these gypsies attacking people in these villages, these towns, and they've went out there and they protected them. They have taken up for where the system has fallen pitifully short in protecting the people there of Greece. We have areas of this country that are just as bad, where whites are routinely attacked, or the system has failed miserably. But we don't have whites who have stood up to do anything else besides complain about. So we have got to realize that until we start giving our people something more than just a recounting of the problems that we're facing, that we're essentially just pretty much saying the same thing that they're saying.
Well, Robert, we have a very daunting task ahead of us because our numbers are pretty low, and the black youths out there seem to have control of the streets. However, we may still be a majority in this country. I'm still not sure about that. In the youth demographic, we're actually not. We are now a minority in the country in regard to school-age children. But when even just a few of us get together and are organized, the media, Jews in general, and the non-whites flip their shit. They get very, very worried. And this is the reaction that we saw to the white man march. And that just goes to show you how important what you're saying really is, that we need to just not complain about the issue, just to go through all of these little facts and say, this is what they're doing to us. We need to also lay out a blueprint that says, this is what we're going to do right back. And not always reacting to what they're doing, but being proactive and saying, I don't give a damn what you're saying, what you're doing. I'm going to march forward with my agenda, and you can react to me. This is what the Golden Dawn really was doing in Greece, as you mentioned, and that's why they basically had to make that party into a criminal organization, because they were rising very, very quickly, and they assassinated a few members and tried to squash it by arresting a number of political leaders, and now, just recently, they put in a ban on Holocaust denial to go after them even further. So if you say that 5,999,000 Jews died in the Holocaust, you are liable to be arrested. How dare you forget about a few thousand Jews? You have to say that exactly 6 million or more, I guess, Jews died in the Holocaust, or else you're going to jail, Goyim.
Yeah, I saw that on the website there. I wasn't even aware they actually did that today. You know, what we have to realize, my friends, is that we are dealing with an enemy that is used to absolutely no credible opposition. We have to realize that when considering whether or not to stand up against them, because I'm telling you, and it won't be this way the whole way through. They're going to make adjustments along the way. If you're into a true revolutionary mindset, you've got to know that. Sure, you know, there's so many people in this country that complain about, oh, well, we can't do anything because the government's going to react. That is what it should be an expectation for anybody who's involved in this fight. Now, the fact of the matter is that let me equate it to, say, a boxer who's had, you know, 30 fights coming out of, you know, being an amateur, and he's had 30 fights, but they've all been managed, and he hasn't fought anybody. You know, maybe it's some horse that's going to run in a big race, Kentucky Derby, and he's coming from a track that is some, you know, bush league track from middle of nowhere. You know, the fact is that we have, maybe we can actually see some advantage if we look. Even though it's disgusting to look at the cowardice of our people and how much our people have been on their heels and how much over and over and over again the enemy has been able to prevail over us, just rout us, because usually it's this managed conservative opposition that you know, just isn't even, it allows the Jews to dictate their policy. They do only what the Jews say that they can do and oppose the left in only the way they say they can.
if we can find any advantage in that, we have a leftist opponent. We have an anti-white opponent, the Jews. They are not used to any kind of opposition. They're not used to white people standing up. And we can take this, at least in the short term, as a huge advantage for us, that we can make gains and we can act. And the thing is, what, you know, I said this on an earlier show when I was on, you know, the fact is that we are allowing, when we do not act, when we do not make actions and take chances and run campaigns like I'm doing, we're not forcing the system to react and to act. We're allowing this system to continue, to let this immigration continue, allow this country to be invaded, allowing the anti-white establishment and this coddling of blacks to continue, and whites are complaining about that, they're angry, but nothing's happening. Now, what happens, I can tell you exactly what's going to happen, because it's happened in Europe, because as you said, they've taken action, and it has grown, it has led to the popularity of the Golden Dawn and other parties. It has led to their popularity growing. The fact is, if we had any kind, say, we have these guys out on the streets, and they have success. Let's say they stop. Let's say the white guard stops an act of violence against a white woman in the street. How is the system going to react? They're not going to in any way do anything but negatively in some way, shape, or form condemn the activities of that group of white men who have stood up for the safety of our people. Now, how is the white population going to react to that? They're going to become more alienated. So the government reacts to what we're doing. They're going to become more alienated by it. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be easy. But if we can get out there, I mean, that is just an absolute, just envisioning this thing, there couldn't be anything better than that happen. If a white woman was spared a robbery or a rape happening as a result of white men being out on the streets in an organized fashion stopping it, I mean, can you imagine not only the system alienating people, but whites out there being invigorated and being encouraged by that?
Mm-hmm. We can't be worried about how the media will portray us. We know how they'll do it. They're Jews. They're controlled by Jews if they're not themselves of the Hebrew bloodline. But I think that we really need to take control, even more so, of the narrative. We have all of these comment sections in various news sites being dominated by people like us. But as you said, that can't be the only thing. We need to use that power to support people who are getting out there and bringing this to the public like you're doing. We need to bring the force that we have on the internet and the ability that we have to change the narrative through memes and through other forms of media, and we need to bring this out to the streets and have one supporting the other. And it's something that is materializing. And whereas the anti-white establishment could persecute a man like Edgar Steele just a few years ago, I think they would be a little bit more hesitant to do so now, because in the last few years, this movement has made leaps and bounds in popularity. And so we really are starting to turn the tide. I don't want to seem too optimistic here, but if we keep pushing, our enemy will now be on their heels. And pretty soon, after we push them right over, they will be turning their asses right around, tucking tail and hightailing it for Tel Aviv.
Well, let's talk about control, and then let me get back on, because I want people to recognize the significance of what's going to start next Sunday, and that is taking over their media, an arm of their media empire. The station that I'm going to be appearing on isn't some, staticky station on the end of the dial that hardly anyone listens to that's had four different formats on it for the past, like, year. This is a very well-known talk station in the Cincinnati area. It has during the week Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck. Now, these people do not syndicate their programs. The people who, you know, go about syndicating these programs, they don't put them on stations where no one's going to listen. I am on Sunday night starting at 10 o'clock next Sunday, and every Sunday after that, going to be commandeering, hijacking their network through something called the Reasonable Access Law. This is something that, through running for federal office, as I'm doing, I am able to be guaranteed uncensored time. Now, people might not have any conception of this, or they might not think it's, they might not quite believe it, but there are going to be people out there driving their cars, not only friends, but also enemies. And let me tell you something. Now, I am dealing with a station here in Cincinnati that has a history of knowing that they have to give this time out. There's been a man by the name of Jim Condit who has been running ads for years here. He's been running shows. Usually he'll do two or three. He's not doing as many as I'm doing here. But he also runs commercials during the day that promotes these shows. I'm not putting money toward that. I'm going to try to promote the shows, and with running seven of them, I think that they're going to build just with word of mouth. But the fact is that in Chicago, Condit was running ads. Now, through this reasonable access law, not only can you buy ads in your own area, but you can actually use the argument, and actually he was buying ads in New Hampshire and Chicago, where theoretically a voter from where he's from, Ohio, can be traveling through there. And theoretically, that time is afforded to him and has to be given to him because, you know, that could be exposure to his campaign. Someone's in Chicago, they listen to the ad, they live in Ohio, they're there on vacation. This is how the system reacted there. They started getting, he was running ads, about basically calling, Michael Chertoff what he is, a Zionist agent, dual citizen of Israel. And, you know, Condit's a lot more softer on just the Jews collectively, and certainly not a racialist. But these ads were responded to by the local population of the self-chosen in the form of calls to the station to blow up the station. Now, in Chicago, at this other station, they actually pulled his ads because they were getting so many calls in that were just vehemently against what he was doing. Now, that was in Chicago. They were actually in violation of the law. Condit had talked about suing them. I don't know if he had gotten, just couldn't get the support legally to do that. But the fact is that these stations don't adhere to this law. They can have their license pulled, folks, by the FCC. They have to give this time out. It's funny, funny thing about this law is that it was actually put into practice because they were throwing a bone to the blacks because these black candidates supposedly weren't getting the kind of exposure that they needed to get on the map. So they wrote this into law back, I think it was in the 80s. And this station that I'm on, though, has in the past, you know, gotten all kinds of flack for it that they have maintained. Now, we'll see, you know, if someone who goes even farther than Condit, how far we get. I'm, you know, I the shows are paid for, folks. I dropped off a check earlier this week for all seven shows, getting them all paid for. And I'm going to be right in there in studio, and we are going to be openly naming the Jew. We are going to be openly talking about something that here is going to be extremely receptive, the absolute war zone, the war, and something that has been, over the last few weeks since the start of classes down at the University of Cincinnati, has been an absolute just assault on our people by these local blacks down there, and this is something that is on the minds of people, and they have nothing but a managed debate when they do talk about it on the local radio, on the local media. It's a you know, something that's censored and managed, and this is something not only friends but also enemies are going to be getting a good dose of the truth and of a white man who's standing up, calling on other white people to stand up just like he is. So this is something that is a bona fide coup for our side. And again, if it were not for this reasonable access law, you know, there's other things that are part of this campaign that I'm glad I'm running, but this was the main reason, and we're going to start delivering next week.
Celtic Pride is asking in the chat, is there a way we can listen to Robert's show? The answer to that is yes. even if you're not in the AM range there, you go over to whiteguard.us and then go to the website of this station, and it should be streaming there at 10 p.m. Eastern for the next 7 Sundays, right after this show. So I will remind listeners to go check you out after I do 2 hours over here, and we can restream you if you want right from Renegade Broadcasting.
I asked about that when I dropped off the check this week, and they did confirm to me that the streaming, just as usual, even for these paid programs, will be streaming through their website. There's also an app. There was someone actually posted on one of the message boards that I post that said, I think it's iHeartRadio. If you have an iHeartRadio app on your phone, that you can actually download that app and actually listen, I believe, on your phone. I think this iHeartRadio thing makes it to where you can listen to shows across the country, whether or not you live in that area. And also for, I know you mentioned it very briefly earlier, but the host of this show, as well as, I've made it clear it can be more than just Kyle, that we're going to have kind of a renegade roundtable for one of these, or at least Kyle, one of these programs. I think I've got it slated for like the fourth one, or actually the third one. Third one, I believe, is what I slated for. I might have. Did I already tell you, Kyle, when I was?
I think October 5th.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to have Kyle on, and I'm planning on doing the first two shows just me, and then the last two shows just me, and having guests. And the first show with the guests is going to be Kyle and perhaps others.
Are you going to take any callers?
I'm going to have probably one or two shows where I do. I think it's important that we maintain the narrative and that this is valuable time. I'm not going to spend it arguing with these Jews that call up that are pissed off. I'm not going to spend it at least, again, one or two shows, but I'm not going to spend it arguing with these anti-whites that call up. Again, I think it's the thing that just has me just so eager a week away. Is that we are going to be reaching the masses with this. It is just such, like I said, you cannot minimize the importance of shows like this and networks like this and everything else going on the Internet. I'm not trying to minimize it, but what I'm saying is that perceptive, decent, fed-up people have to find this. They have to come and find it. We, with these radio shows, with this campaign, I am going to be essentially, like I said, a hostile takeover. And we're going to be having one-hour shows on their airwaves, and we are going to be exposing people, again, friends and enemies, to the truth, to the spirit of the white man who aims to be free and who aims to overcome his enemies right there on mainstream radio. So,
You mentioned that it's their airwaves, when in fact it is ours, Robert. We're just taking back what is rightfully ours with you doing this and with all of us out there who are speaking up, who are calling into these shows. They usurped what is rightfully ours. Those airwaves never belonged to Jews. They stole them.
It should be debatable once we get things right. Of course, their existence in a white country being, something that isn't going to be a long-term thing. But it really should be debatable whether a Jew should be able to own a ballpoint pen in a white country, showing as they have a track record of destruction. I have as number one point in my platform, which can be seen at the website, viewed at the website, whiteguard.us, that we have every justification in this country. A elected official such as myself, if I were elected to the U.S. Senate, I could go to the floor of the Senate and justify the seizing of the media, of, as you said, our media, not to mention the fact it was our people whose genius developed genius and the technology and everything that's been developed by our people to make it to where the Jews now have so much of a mass control, more than they ever had at any time during their rotten existence and times over history when they have had power over our people and our nation. The fact of the matter is that this
We have every justification when you have black mob violence happening. They do not report the crimes. This is a direct effect on our safety, not to mention the fact, what are we doing now, being lied into another war in the Middle East? We can look back and point to the numerous amounts of times that we've been lied to. Everyone on this network knows this. Everyone on this network knows, listening right now, that the Jews have targeted our youth with an alien culture, a destructive culture, a culture of death and genocide for our people, that they are without any doubt using their media as a hostile weapon against our people, and that is point one of my platform, that I don't, with or without compensation, we don't need to compensate these people. They need to compensate us for the damage
yes.
done to our people with their media. So, you know, but again, I appreciate you making that point, because that's something that listening later I might have regretted not having been made clear. But as much as I hope that I'm going to be able to reach out to a lot of white people who have been frustrated at the managed debate they hear on the local talk radio or national news like Bill O'Reilly from people supposedly that they want to be on their side, I am at the same time going to be just as happy to have some Jews driving off the road in their cars when they hear a white man get on there and point the finger at them.
Yes. And, Robert, let's briefly touch upon what Jews have been promoting in their media for the past however many decades. They have been not only just promoting miscegenation and laughing at the nerdy white folks and viewing blacks and mestizos as just these godly people upon the planet and making us feel guilty for our crimes. They've also been promoting a race war, promoting the death and destruction of white people. Mr. Lorne Michaels has a great example of this on his Saturday Night Live program, where he has his little Shabbos Goy there, Jamie Foxx, talking about how great it is to kill white people. It's just a short clip, just to hammer this point home yet again.
And I got a movie coming out, Django. Check it out. Leonardo DiCaprio, Samuel Jackson. Django Unchained, I play a slave. How much is that? And in the movie, I have to wear chains. How whack is that? But don't be mad, because I get chains, I get free, I save my life, and I kill all the white people. How great is that?
So, Robert, how great is it that a black man gets to free himself and kill all the white people in the movie? Now, I saw tweets, just tons and tons of tweets that came out after people probably saw this appearance on Saturday Night Live, and after they saw Django Unchained, saying how much they wanted just to go Django on some white people. They wanted to go slap a bitch, a white bitch, or they wanted to go kill some crackers after watching Django Unchained. This is what Jews have been doing to us. When you said we don't need to compensate them, they need to compensate us, that is correct. They need to be held accountable for their promotion of white genocide. And whatever other genocides that they've committed in the world, we'll let those people hold them accountable for that. I'm concerned with white genocide and what they've been doing, and so I will not apologize ever, ever for hurting some Jewish feelings with what I've said. Oh, these poor Jews out there who have been oppressed for so long, they weren't taking part. I don't freaking care. I'm dealing with the genocide of my people, and I'm not scared to use the word Jew. And neither are you, Robert. And you have the campaign With Jews, We Lose. And this is certain to raise some eyebrows, turn some heads, and piss off a whole lot of people. You mentioned to me that you have some signs that will be going up. Do you care to tell us about how you got these signs and what kind of hoops you've had to go through just to be able to make your campaign a reality?
Yeah, well, first let me say this. I take more exception and angered more at the fact that, you know, that that guy is able to get on and say that, and essentially that is the viewpoint and the Jew speaking right along there with that just buffoon of a Negro, of a black man, of a nigger, whatever you want to call him. But the fact of the matter is that I have a hard time taking that guy seriously, because wasn't it like 10 years before he did that movie, he was in that one show and he would dress up like as a woman or something. And some people might out there have, he dressed up as like this grotesque woman and it was supposedly funny and, you know.
Shanae,
You know, how anyone could take that guy seriously after that, I don't care if you're doing it as comedy or not. I mean, that's nice. Your Jewish masters and producers, and you dress up like a woman, and, you know, as far as looking at that guy, I can only laugh. But,
he played the president. We president now. Yeah, he played the president.
Well, I tell you, these signs, I tell you, I don't want to go through the whole thing. Because I tell you, it might be a little demoralizing for some people. Some people might say that people don't do this. But, you know, at the same time, I can say that, you know, we have to stop quitting at the first opportunity at the most convenient. I actually just got these signs done, sort of done, and I'll get to that. But I actually, you know, as someone who likes to be prepared and have been preparing for this run for a long time, I started in July. In late July, actually trying to get these things contracted. And it just shows you the extent of the brainwashing, of the tyranny, that I had three different places that I had contracted to have these things done. From July until, you know, up here until a few weeks ago, I had the fourth place, I got them done. But there's a little bit of an asterisk next to that as far as actually getting them done. I had three places send me back a check. Now, this is violating a legal contract. I mean, this is something that, you know, if I had these signs done, this decided I didn't want to pay for them, you know, then I could be sued just the same way they could be sued technically, because they violated a contract. And I, you know, I had set this thing up. One of the places, the second place I got these signs contracted, the owner actually okayed them. And then after a two-week period, one of the managers there sends me the check back and says that they're refusing to do the sign. I had places trying to shake me down. I had one place I called up that quoted me $1,200, and he wanted to do a cash deal. And he was fine with doing it, but he didn't want any record of it, evidently. There was another individual I talked to on the phone, was open about what I wanted on the signs, and he said that, you know, he was a member of the Chamber of Commerce, and if that ever got out, that would ruin his business. I mean, this is the land of the free. I'm trying to spend money, pay someone money. You know, on the second, third, fourth attempt, I'm telling people, you know, this isn't any kind of, necessarily a support of what I'm doing. I'm just trying to get signs done. I'm running for office like any other politician, and I want signs for my campaign. I ended up getting, like I said, three times. I've got three invoices that were done. I had one, the third place that I had done, they had agreed to do it. They had agreed to do it for $500-some. They give me a call back about 2 days later saying that, oh, that was a wrong quote. It's $800. And at this point, I'm just like, I just want the damn things done, so just do them. He ends up getting back with me a few days later and said there's absolutely no vendors that will do them. He deals with the vendor. So I finally devised a way to get them done. Now, funny thing is, with that third one, some of the listeners out there, Renegade, might get a chuckle out of this. The third one that I actually had them set up, the ones where they couldn't find a vendor to do them, the ones that kind of upcharged me $300, I think they knew because I was in kind of a tough spot getting them done. I actually went in there with this story saying that I was running this campaign as kind of an off-kilter way of fighting anti-Semitism. I said that, you know, with this Israeli war on the Palestinians, I'm seeing a rising tide in anti-Semitism, and I'm just very concerned. I want to show people that if this is not, something is not done, that there's going to be political candidates that are out here running for office. So this is a bullshit story. And I don't even know if I had to say it or not, but I know I had two other companies that, you know, were afraid of just dematerializing. I guess if they had made signs, they were just going to dematerialize or spontaneously combust or whatever. People with this conditioned response of disappearing, the Jude conditioning. But anyway, the way I ended up getting them done was I went into a place. Now, I wasn't even secure about it because I'd actually called this place before. I had called them, and they actually did them. I called them and spoke with someone, and they said, no, we couldn't do that. I called them back because they were the cheapest. And this place, I actually, in the end here, got the signs done the cheapest of any of the other previous places I had contracted with. What I did was I contacted them and said, I want signs that say with and then the blank spot where Jews is supposed to be, with Jews we lose, Robert Ransom for your Senate. Now, what I'm doing, and I've got a third of them done, 50 of them done, front and back. I'm having to go now. And this is the kind of dedication we have to have as white nationalists to overcome this. We can't just stop. And we have to deal with the realities, but we can't just use it as an excuse not to get stuff done. And I'm proud to do this stuff because I've got the damn signs finally. But I'm having to go and take stencils, and I found these really big Sharpies, these things that people kind of use in, factories, I guess. And I'm taking stencils and completing the signs, putting Jews in there. They're coming out just great. It looks super, obviously paying as much as I did for the signs, even still with it being cheaper, I want these things to look super nice, professional. That's just what they look like. And it's taken a little bit of extra work, obviously, to do this. And I tell you, some of the enemies would say we have Jews on our brain. Well, I definitely have Jews on my brain, due in part to the fact that, you've brainwashed everybody so much to where I'm having to write Jews 300 times. Front and back on the signs, 150 signs front and back, and we've got 50 of them done with the stakes and everything. These things are 18 by 24 signs, coroplast, and they are going to start going up tomorrow. They're going to start going all around. What I'm going to do with this, too, is... there's going to be certain places. They've got these laws written. As much as they have laws that are in place, it actually makes it a misdemeanor to remove them. That's another thing that we can take as an advantage here. So many nationalists out there have experienced it over time. We've seen people on the news, these self-righteous idiots that think they know what everyone else knows and think what they think as everyone else, thinks, and they take literature off cars and they see it's pro-white literature, whatever. It's actually a misdemeanor to remove campaign signage of any candidate, whether it be federal or state or local. Now, what I'm planning on doing, as much as they do have the laws to protect that, they have these laws that suppose, I don't even know, I think these run afoul of the Constitution. I think there's been challenges, but there are laws in Kentucky and I think in Ohio as well where you can't have them, in the public right away. It's supposedly distracting even though you have all this other signage everywhere and whatever. But I'm only going to put the signs down permanently in places where other candidates are, because there's still places, at least in my area, where there are signs in the public right-of-way. So I'm going to put them in places where they can't possibly say that, oh, well, mine can't be there and anyone else's can, or they're going to have to take everyone's up. But one thing I'm planning on doing in periods of time is that I'm going to find a busy highway. I'm going to find a busy, place where there's high volume of traffic, and I'm just going to line up, 9 of them. Now, I'm not going to spend that many resources and leave all those signs there. I'm going to line up 8, 9, 10 of them in a row, and that's obviously going to get people's attention. And I'm going to be, standing far from that to where I can and see them. If anybody comes up, then we can come up and inform them that they're committing a crime, and if they want to put them down, then we won't call the police. But this is going to be something to where after I do that, I can take them up and, maybe go to another area for a couple hours or something. But, this is going to be something I think that I think more than the radio programs, Kyle, is really going to get the attention if we get media coverage, which, I would be surprised if it doesn't get it for something during the course of this campaign. I think the radio shows they're going to actually try to be silent on, because if they give those any kind of publicity, that's an hour of me making clear to the white population that I'm not some, crazed lunatic in a hood or something that they're going to try to play me out to be. These signs, I think, are going to be so in their face and people's faces that it's going to be hard for them to just ignore. I've already done it. I've been out with these signs that I had previously had done that we saw kind of in the campaign video that you can watch on YouTube, one of them anyway. I had these two signs done originally for some preliminary campaign events. I had these done at a different kind of place. I think it's called Fast Signs or something like that. And I actually had experience there. They didn't want to put them, and maybe this is why I was more confident later on getting all these signs produced and didn't anticipate this kind of problem that I've had, because I laid down the law with the guy. I was like, look, we have a legal contract. If you don't, you can say you don't want to do any more for me, but if you don't make these signs, then, you know, that's breaking a legal contract. So they ended up doing them. But I've went up over, in Cincinnati, 7175, the interstate goes through the downtown area, and you have these streets that cross over it, pedestrian streets and walkways. And I've been there's been two consecutive Fridays. It wasn't this past Friday, but the two before that, where I was up over the highway, the four-lane highway, and just a lot of supportive honks, especially by truck drivers. I think that's going to be a major listening audience. There's going to be a lot of truckers that are going to be listening during the 10 o'clock hour there on Sunday. And, putting the signs up over the highway, right there where, hundreds of cars are passing every 5 minutes, So, these signs, I think,
that's
are going to be something that definitely get people's attention.
Just my own little story about producing pro-white materials. I used this website, 4over4.com, and got some bumper stickers and buttons and business cards printed out. And one of the business cards I did, they offer free business cards. I think maybe 300 free business cards that are printed with their logo on the back. All you have to do is pay for shipping, and it says on the back, just a little part of the bottom, free business cards at 4over4.com. They shipped the business cards to me first with this on the back, as part of the arrangement for getting the cards free, meaning you're only paying for shipping. And the card said, are you proud of who you are? And it says, I'm proud to be black, said the black man. I'm proud to be Mexican, said the Mexican man. I'm proud to be Asian, said the Asian man. I'm proud to be white, said the racist man. Why are there double standards for whites? We are living in an anti-white society. We are undergoing a process of demoralization. We are becoming a dispossessed people. And apparently the people who gave these out, who I sent them to, they had a pretty good response. But when somebody took that design from me, I sent them the JPEG for the design, and they got them printed for free themselves, this company decided that they would give them to the person for free, but they weren't going to put their little advertisement on the back this time. So, people, you should take advantage of this. The fact that a lot of these companies do want your business, and you can get some pretty good deals on things like business cards in bulk that you can design professionally and then give out en masse. So, and in this case, they might not even put their own branding on it because they're so scared of being tied to anything that might be considered racist, proving our point entirely.
Well, I even went to these guys, the people who made the signs. I even told them, I said, I'll sign something saying that I'm not going to divulge, where you got these signs from. And people were just terrified, and in that respect, as far as taking their logo off, I understand it. But, what I think is just such a gift for me, and really puts I've got to put up or shut up here, because I don't think that me running this campaign, that my running this campaign could have happened at a better time. Because I think that, we have we're a month removed or so from these black riots. We've got another Jewish-inspired war in the Middle East that's being presented and being justified with all these theatrics and crap. The Jews have become so arrogant now they don't even wait 10 to 15 years for the sheep and the goyim to fall asleep again. They just want to go right back in, and it's really going to be on the minds of people. On top of that, you have the rumored legalization of these millions of non-white invaders from south of the border, and I think I couldn't ask for a better environment. On top of that, I have an opponent in Mitch McConnell, of which I have a video online that directs most of my comments during the 8 to 10 minutes on that video about his treachery. And I am opposed. One of my opponents in this election is one of the biggest Jew, Stepan Fetchit, supporters of Israel, absolute prostitute of Israel. So it's just something that, you know, I've got to deliver now, and I intend 100% to do so. One thing I want to do too, Casey, just bring up those videos. I wanted to, here on Renegade, thank someone who's either listening now or probably listen to the podcast later on, local supporter of yours as well as mine, someone who has really taken the initiative throughout here in the last month, especially this campaign, and those videos that have been online now would not have ever gotten made if it wasn't for his help and assistance, and a number of the posters that have went up as well that you can see on whiteguard.us. I have to say the help, not only from him, but you. I got a beyond generous donation from a fellow here locally, as well, that has made it to where I'm doing now 7 shows, where I originally had put it at about 3 or 4 at the most that I would be able to fund on my own. And I have experienced myself more support and more help and assistance than I have ever gotten in the 10 years that I've been active. So, yeah, I mean, it's something I think that already has inspired people, like the fellow here locally, you know, like I said, he just going nonstop with these posters, and like I said, just getting together with the funny thing about it was that the morning that I was supposed to do those videos, I guess the storm ran through, is what I'm determining now. I thought it was this local power company that the power went out, and I was actually supposed to meet a fellow from a message board that I had communication with prior to that. He was actually coming through town for Labor Day. And it actually missed him, unfortunately, but I actually missed the appointment with the help for my videos, and he gets back with me later on in the day, and we reschedule, and it's just that kind of thing. Just usually what you get is people promising to help you, and it all falls through, and it's just a real shot in the arm for me. And, you know, it's definitely put not pressure, but just that much more I'm just that much more intent to really knock this thing out of the yard with regard to this campaign.
Isn't it great to find people who are willing to actually do this, to help out and actually do what they say, and not only do what they say.
Whoops. Yeah,
sorry, yeah, my earbud got pulled out for a second there. Apologies. Not people that not only do what they say, but go above and beyond. This is the kind of people that we need, not those that flake out, that say one thing but do another, that don't do anything at all. And I really get enthused by these kind of people as well. And so I encourage people out there to be like this, to lend a helping hand. And people out there that are donating, contributing, look at people like Robert who are actually getting out there and doing something. Fund people who have proven results, who have actually done things in the past and will do things in the future. This is the way that we'll be able to move forward. And if you can't donate any money, you can donate a little bit of time, and all of it, all help is appreciated. So I really hope that people go over to whiteguard.us. And, Robert, what happens if they call that 1-800 number?
1-800-488-1363. You just leave a message if you'd like. My email address is Ransdell, that's RANSDELL, 4FORUSSenate. 2014@yahoo.com. Ransdell 4, U.S. Senate, 2014-20-14-14@yahoo.com. If you go onto YouTube, you just put in Robert Ransdell for Senate. It'll bring up the 4 videos that were produced. 3 of the 4, with the exception of the introduction one, which I thought was the poorest of the 3. I actually all did that all in one take, and got warmed up there after some initial outtakes with the probably did 6 or 7 times the introduction. It still didn't come out as good as I thought. But, you know, the discussion about the White Guard is on there, discussion about one of my opponents, Mitch McConnell, is on there, as well as people who have already, I've heard already and I'm going to hear as I've been out and about, you know, how are you going to win with Jews we lose? Well, you know, I think it's just people who are concerned about what's going on in this country who at least act as if they want to have something done. I just don't know how the hell they expect to win until they actually name the Jew and stop, you know, they want to hear, it's almost they want to continue being fed this line of bullshit from the establishment, and they want people to go out and still talk about the same things, the same things, and, you know, essentially they want to hear, they want to be lied to, some of these people. I think they need to be shocked, and they need to be, you know, made to realize that we're in this hole because we haven't been asking the questions, the right questions. We haven't been pointing the finger at the right direction, and that is the source of the problem. That is the Jew, you know. And you know, whether it be you know the black rioting, all this stuff, and you mentioned earlier. I don't want to forget you know, just the kind of inspiration that black statements like Fox and this inspiration and the way that the media incites riots and. You know, and that the black population know that whites are, you know, in a state of submission to them and in a state of just, you know, not fighting back. And we have to realize that it's not only been that, but we have to also see that, of course, the Jew media, what they've directed at our people. And it's a two-pronged thing. It's encouraging blacks to attack whites. It's also encouraging whites to constantly submit to constantly allow them to get away with anything, you know, something that is happening, that has happened over the years here in my area, is going to be something that, as I, these radio shows are going to be something that are going to be focused more on a broad spectrum. I'm not going to get on there and just talk about one issue. We're going to talk about you know, we're going to bring up facts and documentation and perhaps get into, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but not just, you know, we're not going to get on there and have an hour just about the Jewish role in communism in Russia. You know, but there's one topic that, in a specific location, actually, that I will actually make an exception for, especially if these crimes continue, and that is this war zone. That is extant and has been for decades in Cincinnati, around the campus of the University of Cincinnati, and also actually bleeds over sometimes over to Xavier University, which is probably about 10 to 15 miles away. Currently, school is just getting back in there, and there have been 10 reported robberies. There have been break-ins into houses. One of the blacks, or a couple of the blacks, using the fire escape of one of these houses to come up and hold up these kids at gunpoint. And what is the media doing? They're saying, well, the police have hired, there's been more police hired, and we've got lights. There's more lights that are going to be turned on. I mentioned that in the White Guard video, talking about specifically addressing the UC crime problem down there. We've got cameras now. How is this going to change blacks? How is this going to change how they view white people out there, and specifically our women and our children, white women and white kids that are down there trying to get an education? What I want to make clear to the audience, because I had someone who had commented on a message board that was kind of the opinion that the blacks were on the campus there and that they were, you know, that we had, you know, white girls that were falling victim to, like, black students. Unlike a lot of college campuses, this school is right down in the middle of the ghetto down there. So they're having to deal with I was down there last week actually preparing an action that I actually went forward with last week and didn't quite work out the way I had was hoping. I'm still kind of a question mark as to what happened last week with my action that I thought was going to be possibly splashing this campaign on the media airwaves for the first time. But you know, I was walking down there the other day when I was making preparations for this action, and you know, you've got this black guy walking down the street talking to himself, and I mean, they're right down there in the war zone, in the ghetto. right down there. And, you know, this has been something that has been happening in this area here for decades. These kids have been attacked down there. It's always white students. And the local media is constantly in a you know, this mode of censoring out and downplaying it. They're always, they've said probably on every report that they've had that crime is actually down around the area, but just over and over again since the beginning, these classes starting, they've just been besieged by these blacks down there.
And so what is the White Guard going to do about this? How many people do you have already, and how can people join up or start a chapter of their own?
I'm not actually releasing how many people are in it at this time, but, I mean, we need to have a 24-hour you know, patrol time down there. We need to have white men on the streets at all hours because, I mean, you know, they tell them to walk in groups, and they're still attacked in groups, you know. So, you know, at this time, you know, you have people, you have individuals who have chosen to take this up who have jobs, who have other responsibilities. So, you know, unfortunately, at this stage, we're not going to have, you know, the kind of coverage that we would like. But, you know, I'm going to use these radio shows to report on the progress of the White Guard. Let the people know who are concerned about this, regular people driving in their cars, might be parents of kids who go to school down there, even though I have to kind of question the wisdom of sending your kid to school, if you even, I mean, I don't know what's going through these parents' minds when they visit, you know, most people do college visits, to see this area around there and to have any conception of what goes on during the school year with regard to this black-on-white crime, I think you'd have to be halfway insane as a parent. Nuts to send your kid there, but you know, we're going to be provocatively promoting this White Guard. Now, we'll see. I can't predict how the population's going to react. But I mean, with these radio shows, you know, the sky's the limit. I mean, you know, we can get the reaction from people. If I get enough emails, enough reaction, positive, we can call for rallies, a campaign rally. We can call for, you know, a mass gathering down there on that campus or around that campus by whites in the area that are sick and tired of it. I'm going to have a platform to be able to, you know, essentially make this thing grow. And what I see going forward, and certainly in those last couple shows, you know, depending on how effective I can be, what the response is, I think what our goal needs to be, and this is what I've thought and said for, you know, a while, we need to start, you know, these black-on-white crimes get to the soul of our people. You know, our people are frustrated and angry about what's going on, but they don't have anything beyond a computer to go on and complain about. There's no one out there that is telling them, the, you know, what the guts of what has to be done about this. It's always this managed kind of, let's let you go so far about complaining about it. And a lot of these conservative networks like Fox News and some of these talk radio stations, they make money off of it. They get listenership through it because people are so tired. But they're only going to allow it to get to a certain point. I'm going to be going well beyond that point, to the point that needs to be made, and that we as white people need to stand up for ourselves. Now, you know, those last couple shows, if this thing really grows, I'm gonna tell people what we need is we need a man, we need an activist. I'll volunteer myself. I'm not saying I'm the most capable, and we'll see how capable I am, but somebody, we need a group. We need to start having a response to these attacks and events, and we need to start responding to the anger of our people and the frustration of our people. And if there's a black-on-white crime, girl is raped and murdered in Tampa, we need to have that person or that group there. And damn it, if it's these incidents happen enough to where we could go every week, and the potential, if that were to grow, and we're not going to have the help of the media, but if we're able to document it online, we can build a following online, we can promote the hell out of this kind of effort, that essentially it grows and this thing starts to be something that can start to snowball and grow, and something, again, that the system has to react to.
And boy, this is, how are most white people going to react? They say, wow, that Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton show up all the time when a white person is looked at funny or, you know, gets offended by some word. This group or this guy's going around and he's calling for an end to this. Because what we have to realize is that, Louisville, Kentucky, this is people who could possibly vote for me. Mob violence that took place earlier in the year. What are the politicians more concerned about after this attack, mass attack of these blacks? They had actually become angry because there was one black guy that shot another black guy on a bus or something like that, and then they had a vigil, and then the vigil broke up, and they started attacking white people. The response by the mayor and the council there after there was this online condemnation of it and whites venting their anger was, oh, this wasn't a racial thing. And as much as we can condemn the slavish servitude to this political correctness of these leaders, we have to take personal responsibility and realize that these leaders have for decades responded to the squeaky wheel. They've responded to the blacks and the minorities that have stood up and given them the most grief, given them the most crap, given them the most, spoke up. And we have been silent. It's easy for white politicians to ignore the white majority because they don't stand up. So if we can start making ourselves as much of a nuisance, demanding that we will be dealt with, if you side with the anti-whites, if you are more concerned about whites speaking up or whites being frustrated than you are about these crimes that are happening, you are going to be called to account. You are going to have negative consequences, and I mean just with groups of people. We're going to have organized condemnation of your anti-white stance in your servitude to this. At this point, they have no, whether it be the police officials, these elected officials, they have nothing negative that's there that they have nothing to lose by selling white people out over and over again. We have to make it to where they are going to be called to account. They are going to be the subject of the same kind of attention by men, groups that are advocating for our people that they do get from the black groups. And they need to start fearing the backlash and the anger of whites in a fashion of organizing and getting out and you're going to have something to fear the next time you have an election that comes up if you just, go along with the system, and we have to know that we're not going to have the media's help. We know that Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson would be just like you and me, Kyle Hunt, if it wasn't for would be in a position of just complaining about stuff, having limited exposure. But two words, work harder. That's what we have to do. We have to just struggle out. Like I've done with these signs, I refused. There was no way these signs aren't going to, and they're going to be going out tomorrow. There was no way that these things were not going to be done. I intended to do it from the beginning. I said I was going to do it, and I'm doing it. I've had to go through hell to get it done, but it gets done. And,
Robert,
a person with will and determination in this era can make it a hell of a long way.
I don't think that William Pierce really had anything like this. I could be wrong concerning the White Guard. And maybe you could correct me if I'm wrong. But it really was George Lincoln Rockwell you're drawing this inspiration from, as you mentioned. Did he actually have this White Guard realized? Were they actually out there
doing
patrols?
Rockwell, I think before he was shot, it was an idea. I don't that honestly, I could not answer. I know that he had on a number of occasions talked about it, and I think if it was it didn't come to fruition, what limited that was the fact that he was shot and assassinated. Now, one thing he did do, and probably even better than the White Guard idea, was that he would have his guys show up. There would be time, and again, the system actually would go after him because the system. I think one time he talked about it, this police officer said, "Well, wherever Martin Luther King shows up, Rockwell shows up, so he must be working for Martin Luther King or something." I mean, it's just befuddled, dumbass local law enforcement that had no clue of what was going on. He was trying to effectively counter this this very sophisticated assault on our people that was being done by the communists. They use very sophisticated means to be able to put forth this
communist black revolution on our society. Now, there was at one point, I do know that he had his guys, it was at least in his plans, I think he had them derailed because the guy had arrested him and put him in jail and put all his guys in jail. I don't know on what grounds, but his plan was when they went into Selma. It was when they had that march in Selma. George Lincoln Rockwell was going to try to get the city to put up a big banner and said, and it was going to say, "Welcome niggers," and they were going to basically come out and as he was up there at the speech at the podium making a speech, his plan was to have guys dress up in monkey suits and have like them putting ketchup on hamburgers and dancing around behind them. And see, how would the white population, especially at that time, reacted? They would have been laughing their ass off. They wouldn't have heard any of these all so, you know, holy words that were being said by this, you know, saint, patron saint of the black. There'd been a bunch of monkeys dressed up in the background jumping around and, you know. So, I mean, these were the kinds of things that, you know, Rockwell was never, and even more than Dr. Pierce, you know, I mean, Dr. Pierce's writings, I was kind of a coming into this movement, I actually read Dr. Pierce's words, read his broadcast. When I came into this, you know, I would go to the library and I'd print out four or five different broadcasts, read them. I read his work before I even heard his broadcast. And, you know, he was a little bit more, less inclined to go at the public. Rockwell, on the, which I take, honestly, even, you know, more inspiration even from him, was that he was somebody that believed in showing our people how, you know, the fight and the guts and how to go at the enemy. And that, you know, he believed in a very sophisticated mode of attack, and that we had to, you know, he had the idea that we, in order to get our people, we have to give them a program that is emotionally satisfying. He was somebody that worked on Madison Avenue, an advertiser. He worked in advertising. He said you have to give a program that is emotionally satisfying to people, and you're not going to satisfy people emotionally through just telling them about the Constitution and states' rights and all this stuff. That you have to, you know, you have to appeal to them at what gets them emotional. You're never going to get people emotionally involved and behind you without getting them first emotional. You know.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he was very good at delivering speeches and getting the audience on his side. He'd make them laugh. He was quite the character, very charismatic. And whereas people today dressed up in National Socialist uniforms don't really pull it off so well, in my opinion, he really seems to have pulled it off pretty well with what he was doing. And he was doing it as a showman, and it got him the attention that he wanted, and he was able to get his message out to a good many people and really set the stage for where we are today. A lot of the movement in the United States drew their inspiration or even their lineage from the work that was done by George Lincoln Rockwell. And I think that he was kind of lost for quite some time to history. We know all about Martin Luther King Jr. growing up, that great saint, right? And we knew nothing, not even any words of condemnation against George Lincoln Rockwell in our textbooks. He was just completely obliterated from the consciousness. Why? Because what he was saying was dead on. He had the documents to prove it, as he said so often. Hey, Robert, it looks like we might have a few calls here on the line. You want to go to the call board? All right.
Sure.
Well, and if anybody else wants to call in, 347-633-9657. I think this might be Don Advo. I could be wrong. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, this is. But I was just mainly calling to listen. I followed Mr. Ransdale's thread on Stormfront, and I saw that he was on, and I wanted to hear about his adventures and his misadventures with standing up for white people. My compliments.
Thank you, sir.
Great white activist.
Well, thank you very much. And keep on keeping tabs, because, you know, as I said, the preparation part is basically what the first couple months of this has been. Now we get into the real fun. So, you know, keep paying attention.
We'll do. Best of luck.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Don, do you have any advice, any questions, or any other comments you'd like to add tonight?
Well, that was pretty creative how he did his signs, where he had it partially printed and then he finished it up with a stencil. I've known people, Republicans here in Los Angeles County, that had to do things like that. It's very, there's a lot of dirty tricks and that kind of thing involved. I was involved in mainstream politics for many years. You'd be surprised how much of that stuff goes on, where somebody contracts to do your signs and then they sabotage them. They put a picture of the adversary in the corner of it or something, and then, you know, litigation is very expensive and not worth the effort. But hats off to the creativity and the resilience that he showed in being able to get that done with the stencils. I've had a few experiences like that here in Southern California, but so I know exactly what he's going through, and I think he's right about being right out there in their face with a blunt, explicit message. We've had enough of half measures. Half measures have gotten us nowhere for my entire lifetime. And I say that as somebody who walked precincts as a teenager for Barry Goldwater and volunteered for Ronald Reagan's first run in 1966 when I was still in school. And what do we get for those losers? The Martin Luther King holiday and the first amnesty for mestizos from Ronald Reagan. So, again, congratulations to Mr. Ransdale.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Yeah, we have to radicalize those conservatives that need to know that they're soon going, well, they're in the process of being, and they're going to be sold out by their leadership. And the Republican Party is one way or the other going to die. It's either going to scare away and frustrate its white base, or it's going to fail miserably to try in this kind of ridiculous way. They think they can get, you know, these masses of swarthy Mexicans to vote for them by putting up a silver spoon guy who's been raised in a white environment. They think that that's race. Someone like Ted Cruz or who's Rubio.
Rubio.
They don't realize that, you know, they may not regard race as important, but that these Mexicans are only going to be voting for people that are, you know, reds, that are people who are openly advocating for their racial interests. And they'll even, that these people will even vote for a white traitor who's going to do that before they would some, you know, Republican, you know, half-breed mestizo, half-white, half-mestizo, and Cruz guy, whatever, that is just, you know, the Republicans just don't get it. They just don't. You can't confront a radical leftist foe in this kind of way that they've been doing things for so long, which is allowing the enemy to dictate their policy, drawing this little circle on the ground, calling it kosher conservative or responsible conservatism, and just staying within that and only doing what the Jews say is as admirable as Ron Paul is striving to try to reach out to people was. He still came up short on a number of different issues and didn't tell all of the truth. And as Rockwell said, you either tell all the truth or you are a liar, you know. So, hello?
Yes. Well, if Don has nothing else to add, we'll see if any other callers are interested in joining the program here. We have one here. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah.
804, yes. Yes.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm just listening.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. I will mute you. Yes, thank you. And if anybody else wants to call in, it's 347-633-9657. I mute myself while you're talking because you have so much to say. And in that instance, I was feeding the cats there and was was muted while you finished up. This is a professional kind of studio that I run here at Renegade Broadcasting. It's, you know, really high-quality programming all of the time with no errors whatsoever. it's fun. It's fun. I like what we do here.
Well, what you do is essential, Kyle, and, you know, I want to once again reiterate to everyone listening that this network right here, at least it's the man that makes it go, is going to be on one of my programs on mainstream. So, and also the network here, I'm going to try to remember to, you know, give a promotion to at least once on hopefully every show if I can remember to do it. And, you know, once again, you know, I've been looking forward to this thing for probably better than close to a year and a half. And, you know, just that I'm ready to about this time next week to launch the assault against the enemy here on the radio. And it's going to be people are going to be hearing something they've never heard before. The really kind of thing about it, I think, that's really just going to drive the Jews nuts is that the final 2 or 3 weeks, even though the first hour is going to be something that is a whole hell of a lot more effective, I think, than the second hour, but what people might get a bit of a chuckle out of is that there's actually going to be me on the radio from 10 until 11, and then 11 to midnight, I believe. Now, I got the times before he did, but Jim Condit is going to be on there, and I believe he's going to have, if I'm correct, he's going to have James Traficant, who was sent to prison for some technicalities. This was after he came to the aid of John Demjanjuk, one of the folks that the Jews, you know, just absolutely harassed for years about supposedly being a Nazi prison guard, and Traficant stood up, and you know, he wasn't one of their seppenfetches, and he ran basically into their tyranny and their tyrannical action against him. I think they got him for some kind of tax impropriety or something, some kind of technicality. But there's going to be, on those final 2 or 3 shows, 2 hours. There have been some years where Jim has been more forthright on the Jews than not. He had one series of shows a few years ago where every show he had one of the survivors of the USS Liberty on. So, you know, even more probably irritating to the Jew. And it's going to be interesting as this progresses. I mean, I've already taken preparations myself. I've got a lockable gas cap now on my car. You know, wow. I'm expecting any – well, you know, I don't want to – you know, a little investment like that, I don't want to end up regretting not making, just in case they want to, you know, pull any kind of – you know, these people are capable of a lot of things. And as Rockwell said, if they can't smear you to shut you up, if silencing you and ignoring you doesn't work, and they're not – that's not going to help them here, because they're not going to have anything they can do about this, that they resort to terrorism. So we'll try to prepare as best we can for that as well. And Kyle, you've been on the receiving end of that. But, you know, this is something that is going to, like I said, I think over 7 weeks, almost 2 months, it's going to be something that I sure as hell hope people, not only here, but just the people in the public, it's just word of mouth. People are going to be hopefully calling friends, whether it be after the show, during the week, or maybe even during the show, hey, man, listen to this. You know, listen to this guy, man. I mean, this guy's talking about the blacks attacking our kids down at UC. So, I mean, it's like I said, it's the whole reason I'm doing this. These signs are going to be fun as hell. I'm going to start with those this week. But these radio shows, man, I'm just I'm hoping to deliver exactly what I'm saying. That's going to be commandeering, a hijacking of their media power that they've taken from us. And we're going to take it back for at least an hour on every Sunday, starting next Sunday at 10 p.m.
Fantastic. It looks like we have another caller here. I think this is Tom Bowie from La Plata, Maryland. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Yes, sir. I was kind of wondering if any of those signs are going to be situated so that maybe one of the local surveillance cameras from a store or something can spot it.
I'll tell you one thing I'm planning on doing with these signs, sir, is I've already, like, kind of, like, I'm actually going to try to put the signs, aside from what I, you know, did an example of earlier as far as lining them all up and putting them in places where other candidates' signs are at, I'm actually going to try to strategically place them in places where it would be kind of dangerous for somebody to get out of their car and remove it. It'd kind of be like a pain in the ass almost. And, you know, maybe I can take the there's already a couple places I have picked out to put these signs where I can, on my own, I can approach in a safe way. It's going to maybe take a little bit of walking to get there. But places on the highway where they're going to see it, but they just can't conveniently pull over and take it off if they want to, that, you know, wouldn't it be such a shame if one of these self-righteous anti-whites ended up getting hit or their car got hit or something because they were just trying to silence the message? But I don't know. Your suggestion of you know, one place I was thinking I would put one, actually, sir, is in front or near every one of these three companies, the three sign companies that refuse to do my signs. I thought it would be a real good little gesture to go back, put the sign, like, maybe even on their property and show them that I got the signs done, you jerk-off, you brainwashed clowns, and I got them done. Here they are. How do you like them, you know? So they're going to be everywhere. I'm actually next week, something I wanted to briefly kind of discuss, too. I'm going to be going to Lexington next week, and this week here, and I'm planning on, you know, the entire way down there, maybe every other exit, you know, putting one in. I mean, obviously, this campaign, the exposure is going to be based kind of around here. But I want to emphasize, too, to folks, and I can't be too descriptive on this, there have been some things that have happened during the course of this campaign, things that have happened because I had the nerve to make the effort to do this that have been unexpected even by me. And I want to make it clear to people that actually if we don't end up getting any media coverage or they try to silence this campaign through just or ignoring it, it's going to work to the advantage of a few things playing out that are an example that if we go out there and have the nerve and the audacity to try and not just be so pessimistic that surprising things can happen and that this system is not perfect and that a lot of the time that people within the system are just paper pushers and they just cut and paste. And again, I'm being kind of, you know, I don't want to give away what is kind of on the platform for me, what's being presented on the platter, on a silver platter for me perhaps, because the enemy might take measures to, you know, they could easily derail it. But, you know, there's some things that are going to take place with this where there might be some folks with some pie on their face, and that we're going to show that I'm going to show that we are not expected to do these things. And when that's the case, we can pull off a lot more than we can originally we might think we might be able to. You know, we always think we're going to be rejected out of turn. Well, you know, we'll see if that is the case here as this campaign progresses. And I think actually on the show, the first show next week, there wasn't any other reason to tune in. I will be making clear to the public and the enemy. The enemy's going to hear it too. I think it's the most funniest thing. About what I was able to accomplish just this next week here. So, you know, that's something that, you know, I wasn't going to run this campaign and just do the radio ads. That's what the fellow I mentioned earlier, Jim Condit, when he runs, that's pretty much all he does. He doesn't do signs. He doesn't do any of these other things. So I wanted to branch out from that, not just do the radio ads, but, you know, I'm definitely, exposure is not going to be any problem. I'm going to make sure that gets done. I can't make the media respond with a story or coverage, but we're gonna get to the people despite them. I can assure you that there's already a lot of people who have been exposed. Whether it be the parade action that I took, whether it be doing these random kind of guerrilla actions over the highway in Cincinnati, I showed up at Fancy Farm, the big political event here in Kentucky, where the day before I actually photobombed. I've done it twice now. I've actually photobombed a couple of newscasts, one here locally and one there in Paducah. I actually, at the time when I had done it, I thought I'd actually gotten the sign behind a reporter from C-SPAN and ended up being a local reporter. There was a C-SPAN truck near her. I thought they were doing a broadcast of C-SPAN, and I thought I got Ransdell for Senate with Jews We Lose, the sign there behind her. But, you know, this is, you got someone here that's not going to rest on their laurels and isn't going to take one failure or one time getting not having things work out and just accept that and say, you know, like I said, these signs got done through a hell of a lot of dedication and refusal to just quit, you know. I actually wouldn't have blamed someone for quitting at some stage of it, you know, but we got them done, and we're going to get a lot more done during this campaign, I can assure you.
News coverage that you get be compiled somewhere so people can find them and post positive comments of support?
What was your question again before?
Will there be some place where the news stories are compiled?
Right now, well, we've got whiteguard.us. There's two. I'm not sure how up to date on the campaign you are. There's actually two discussion threads that I kind of had served that were serving as campaign, kind of a campaign website, or kind of before Kyle put together this website for me. VNN Forum and Stormfront.org. I've had for a number of months a campaign thread that's basically detailed actions that I've already taken. Like I said, I've already had some preliminary events that I've taken part in and tried to promote the campaign here in the initial stages already take place. So, you know, if you're a member there, you can you know, comment on there. There's comments from people that are already on there. But now with the website being up, that's going to be somewhere where you can go, whiteguard.us, that will definitely, any kind of media stories or any kind of really just discussion anywhere. This is the kind of thing that's going to show up on Reddit. This is the kind of thing that's going to show up on these photo sites. And you know, you might have people that are negatively responding, but maybe people like you can respond and, you know, give these leftists a clearer view of reality, and that's that there is a significant amount of people out here that are going to be in total agreement with us. There's another significant majority that are going to be open to hearing an alternative message. And it's just such, again, a coup that we get an hour, that we don't get just a snippet of a smearing news story. In the past when I've been on, you know, enemy media news coverage that have been covering something I've done, I think I've done a pretty good job of, you know, it seems like every one of these stories that come out, every time I hear myself talk, it seems like I did okay, and it seems like most decent white people would not, at least not be in severe disagreement with what I'm saying. But they're going to get an hour to listen to, you know, someone speak the truth. We're going to have, you know, certainly talk about facts and historical events that can be documented that they can go check for themselves. But, the White Guard website is probably the best thing to recommend now or keep up.
Okay, that'll let me find the news, major media stories, and let them know that there's not just a few people. Every voice that adds there will add a little bit of fear to them.
If you go on to and maybe Kyle, if it wouldn't be too much trouble, I could maybe try to get it. I made a call in to 700 WLW, which is actually the most powerful talk station here in this area. This was actually back in the very beginning of June. There was an incident of black-on-white mob violence at a festival downtown. It was actually the Taste of Cincinnati, this big event they have. And I actually called in to... they had some discussion. The main reason this was a topic of discussion on the radio, and it really didn't get a whole lot of coverage beyond that, but the reason it got discussion on there was because the one of the people who were attacked was actually a son of a local prosecutor here there's a couple of the hosts that are on that network who are actually friends with him. So they brought this crime up. And I got on there and basically was able to go farther than the host who was managing the debate went. I got my campaign mentioned on this, and anyone who might want to go onto the thread, or maybe if we can get it, maybe it's actually, you can listen to it on a podcast on the show. It was on a Saturday morning. I wish I could direct people directly to it, but it's on that thread there, the call, and you know, that's one thing that's already been accomplished, kind of just through. The important thing is I get cut off during that call. The thing to realize is that they're not going to have that ability here coming up next week, starting next week for 7 straight weeks. I was able to get on there about 3 minutes. When you get on with these hosts, you have a viewpoint such as ours, you kind of have to go nonstop talk. Don't give them a point to where they can cut you off, and I was able to do that pretty well. But there's quite a bit of backstory, you could say, on the very beginning of the campaign. I've got my entire platform out there, but it's also on the whiteguard.us now too as well. So,
Tom, anything
else? It sounds like you've got a lot of bases already covered and a lot of hard work put in.
Well, with these signs, it was so frustrating with these signs because I'm somebody who likes to be prepared. I like to have everything in a row, and that's the way that's just drug out. Like I said, the second place I'd contracted took 2 weeks, and it was really frustrating me, and honestly getting me hot under the car because I was like, I want to get this out of the way, get this done. I want to be set with these shows and everything. I'm just a real stickler on being prepared and to the T. So yeah, I mean, I hopefully that'll result in just knocking them dead here, show after show and at every opportunity. Like I said, these shows, the signs, they're not going to be the only aspect of this campaign. I've got a couple opportunities that if things work out, might be the biggest coup of anything that I've got set up for this. It's going to be something where, like I said, it's going to be funny if they do try to silence this campaign. It might actually come back to haunt them big time, and that might result in a big media story and, again, some just egg all over people's faces. It's just, to me, and again, I'll have to come back on here or I'll recount it eventually down the line, but it's just amazing some of the things that have happened during the course of this just because I registered as a candidate.
Hey, Robert, somebody asked in the chat how you'll respond when you're called an anti-Semite.
That means I'm a truth teller. 99% of the time when someone's called an anti-Semite in this age, it's because they're telling the truth, and that the Jews have never – they're responsible for their own behavior, you know, and that we no longer should be expected – or be taken to task for opposing the Jews, and we should have to justify ourselves. The Jews should have to justify themselves for having, done over and over and over again over time the same thing, and it's a result of their behavior, and that we can't ever expect these arrogant rats to ever take responsibility for what they're doing. We're fools to do that. But that we must insist that our opposition to their tyranny and what they've done to our people, not only right in here and here and now, but for 2,000 years, is a direct result of what they're doing. And that I'll be damned, and anyone else out there who feels the need to stand up like white men to these rats, to these usurpers, to these people who have taken this religion that they've got, that if they just practiced it on their own and kept it to their synagogues, I wouldn't even be on this radio station. I wouldn't have been doing what I've been doing the last 10 years. But they take it to reality. They take it to, and they affect in an adverse way, in a negative way, our race and our people. And I'm not going to be able to recount this in his exact terms, but I think there was a man who was a part of a stand against them during the middle of the last century. He said that standing against a Jew is a matter of national hygiene. I think it was Goebbels said that. And that any kind of opposition that comes their way, 99% of the time, down through history, has been their own fault. And that anti-Semitic is something that basically means that you're telling the truth about something. Because when is someone called anti-Semitic in this age? And they're not, but then at the same time they could also call me Mr. Anti-Semite too, because I don't give a damn what the hell they call me.
Well, Robert, what do you think about people who say that we should not mention the Jew because people aren't really ready for that, and we should just do and say things that are pro-white and completely?
Go find something else to do with your time. Go find something to do that isn't going to be a complete waste of time, which in this age is kind of hard to find. But, you know, I have, as far as those who, I think you can make progress doing that, but I think you're going to get held up. You're going to, and I'm not in this to have a certain amount of progress. I said this on an earlier show that I was on. I'm involved in this, and everyone out there listening should be involved in this because you want one thing at the end of this, and that is power. That is to attain power. That is to attain the power to change the course of events in our world and in our society and this nation. And again, as Rockwell entitled his book, this time, the world. And the fact is that there is absolutely no way you get to the root cause of the problem and that you fix what's going on here without talking about the root cause of the problem. There's no way you get to the root cause of the problem in this age without talking about the Jew. And, you know, we need to make it clear, first of all, to our people that the Jews aren't white. The Jews aren't white. You know, and we need not know. In the course of doing that, we can maybe make it clear to the blacks that Jews aren't white, because the blacks recognize the effect of the Jews, but they consider the Jews white. You know,
right.
So I think that some of the folks, more than anything else, we can't act as if there's an easy way to win this, or we can't act as if we're going to take this country back from the Jews and them not recognize it, or them not know it, or do it in secret. You know, doing it through not naming the Jew is almost like these people who think that our government can be taken back through the quote-unquote precinct system or something. I don't know if you know or are familiar with the precinct system. Anyone out there, this whole idea of becoming registered as a precinct, supposedly this is a way that you can determine who the delegates are. It's some kind of, you know, the Jews don't play by any rules. And when it comes to that, you know, it's like, it's not as if the Jews are just going to up and say, oh, well, you got us right there. You know, you were able to attain power through the precinct system, and we're just going to give up everything. They're going to make up their own rules as they go along. The fact is that we can have a certain amount of progress in white identity, but what happens when it gets, I mean, are we going to stand up and have a white nation where we still have these Jews there? Are we going to, you know, not recognize that, you know, as much as our population sees the effect that the blacks and the non-whites have, we have to know and we have to impress upon them that we as white people did not make a conscious decision to give up all this. And we're not in this mess. And that the blacks and the other non-whites, they haven't done anything special. And that has been the Jew, of course, as we all know, who has been behind. And I'll tell you something else, too. It is far, and maybe I sound a little, maybe people would just completely deny what I'm saying here. But, you know, we get so up in arms about this Holocaust education and the movies and all this stuff. And I tell you something. History, there's a stream of time, and no matter how much the Jews try to reinforce this stuff, you know, it's something that a lot of our people, especially in this age where there's all this pop culture crap and stuff that they consume, the Holocaust is not something. I mean, you know, you have people that, yeah, they know the supposed 6 million, but that's about it. And you know, they are coming to know the Jews as the people who have, you know, this minority, this persecuted minority, but wow, look at all this power and control they have. And I really think that there's enough, you know, not that it's the way it was in Europe, but that there is a certain amount of history in this country as far as, you know, at one point the Jews were not as worshipped, I guess, or feared as they are today. But there's enough consciousness among our people. You know, the Jews a lot of times are just so arrogant now. You know, they joke about it, you know. So, you know, our people have some conception of it, and as long as you're not, see, the thing that our people can't seem to get over is that, and especially in this age, and I think for those who might have been out kind of doing what I'm doing 20 years ago, they would just say, oh, no way. Our people are changing. They really are. And if it's presented in the right way and you're not conforming to stereotypes and you're not scaring them away, almost, you know, almost just like doing everything you can to get them from joining you by conforming to these stereotypes. I mean, I had it proof positive in front of me as to the mindset of our people. Now, this wouldn't be relative to the Jews, but they're willing to at least give you a little bit of a listen. I'm not saying there aren't millions of people out there who are just going to be, but, you know, there is a significant, sizable minority of people that I think have some conception. And it might have come because, you know, they took a hell of a hit in the last stock market crash.
or they're seeing what the hell these Israelis are doing in Palestine. We are becoming farther and farther separated. You see these Jews worry all the time. They want to reinforce this Holocaust thing because they know. It's starting to – and it's like everyone living today have only seen the Jews in these high positions of power. They've only it's starting to wear off. It really is. This Holocaust thing, it's just – they know it's going away. That's why that they try to push it all the time. But you know, if I'm out on, as far as just, and again, this isn't really relative to Jews, but I mean, I thought, you know, as much as I hated it happening because Kyle, it went to give the media, you know, just the thing that really, in my opinion, damaged the whole thing as far as just the perception of it. But my taking part in the White Man March earlier this year, and having the unfortunate incident of having a couple of guys show up unannounced and unbeknownst to me beforehand that were going to be dressed up in Klan robes. And to have these people show up, we be getting positive support before they show up the entire time. And I, the only reason that I didn't act and that I didn't say anything and I didn't start what could have been a feud and had on the roadside there two sides nominally, at least on the same side, fighting amongst each other was because I saw people, even with people with Klan robes, applauding and honking their horns. Had women coming up, two women with their child, one of their children coming up, and just happy as hell to see us there. Does that mean that we can start doing that and that we can expect the masses? Hell no. But what I'm saying is that our people, so much more now, and with this Obongo presidency, and with the Jews just becoming just more and more blatantly and openly just tyrannically ruling over our country, their arrogance coming through in so many ways, our people just want something to root for. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, you know, this is a change. People need to – and that was so depressing about our side, you know, letting the left just, you know, laugh at this great call to action that you made, Kyle. Was that, you know, and it's so tragic that our side, it's not just tragic, it's stupid, that our side wants to evaluate our progress by how the leftists are going to react, which no matter how
right.
many people we out there, they're going to belittle what we do no matter what. Start looking at what your people do. And I saw on that day people who have been since birth, just like they've been taught about the Holocaust, they've been told that these Ku Klux people, anyone seen with them, they're just evil. It shocked me. It truly shocked me because, I mean, had I sat there after I'd sat for half hour and seen people support us with the signs and everything, had those guys come and killed it all, I'd have been like, get out of here, man. But it's like I was almost just, like, blown away. It's like, you know, why start a fight between, you know, fellow racists even though these guys are not on the same program and not what we wanted for this event or what we want for any kind of constructive program of action. But, you know, it was just it was a powerful message to me that, man, you know, if we just, you know, we don't have to be worried about being perfect all the time. We don't have to worry about, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to do things that we're going to have to be able to improve upon later on. But, man, the first part of it is getting a team out on the field and giving the large minority of whites that are out there that right now just, man, they want someone to root for. They want someone to get behind. And, you know, they may not join us at first, but they like it. They like seeing it out there. They know that, man, these other groups, they got everyone out there for them, you know. So
Well, you know what's interesting is that the media also wanted to portray it like what you did was the only white man march that took place when there is hordes of evidence to the contrary that people all over the world were involved. But they write these stories like, the white man march took place, but only 8 people showed up. No, that was 8 people in one location, and the only place you're reporting on is the place where the Klan shows up.
It just shows you just how, I mean, you know, if there's, there's no, they are just
desperate.
But it's just they're just so they're deluded. I mean, they're deluded. They're wretched. And all of us care about the truth, and every one of us care about our people and the truth. And it can be really disgusting And it's, I tried to limit how angry I got about that because they're just liars, man. I mean, that's what we have to, they're Jews, they're anti-white left people that are fully in line with the program and the Jews, and it was such an absurd thing. But again, what I said earlier during this broadcast, we have, and I'm gonna say this verbatim during these radio programs. White man out there, they think you are absolutely devoid of any, you have any intelligence, any common sense, a walnut in your brain. This is where we should hold back from our temptation to come down so hard on our people and instead appeal to them, even though, yeah, sometimes it's pretty much a freaking reality. They're just constantly befuddled. But the fact that this guy knows that he can put a headline out there and get most people to buy the idea that a worldwide event, an organization that went worldwide, that had people active all over the place, that was never supposed to be a march and was stated over and over again, but they know, just like a very, very hero of all time for our people said, that if you tell a lie that's big enough, they will believe it. They'll believe a big lie before the little lie, and God knows. The audacity of these people, just like they say there were 10 people there, they attribute that to Adolf Hitler, that it was his idea of the big lie when it was him warning his people against the big lie. The fact that they can go out there and say there were 10 people, even though there's pictures from all over the place, that is a signal that they identify the average white person on the street as devoid of intelligence that goes beyond a tree sloth. You know, it goes beyond just that they believe everyone to be absolute imbeciles. And we can be pessimistic and agree that in a lot of instances in this society, time and again, that our people act like that. But we can also strive to make them hate the enemy, for considering them to be that stupid and that robotic. And we need not allow the enemy, and I'm talking to the hardcore racists out there, I hate the fact that our people are this befuddled and just go along with this crap as much as you do. But I'm telling you, to get these people on our side, we're never going to do it by saying, you damn bastards, you better start, you know, seeing these facts and doing it. We have to appeal to them. We have to be positive. We have to never allow the Jew to win, and the Jew wins when they make our activists and the people who care, racially aware white people, hate our own. We have to do everything in our power. And I have my own times. This is a battle I fight, on my own. And I never go out trying to promote our ideals when I'm in one of those moods. If I see some sorry excuse for a white person on TV, you know, just whatever, and it makes me angry, I'm not out there. I'm not going to get out there and do that, do anything to try to promote our interests for our people, because we have to promote them in a way that, you know, we're going to take care of you people. We are for you, you know, and look at this beast. Look at what they think of you. Look at where they're leading you. What have they done for you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, they want for them, their own people to never forget. For us, they want us to never remember.
Oh, yeah.
That's
Did you come up
want.
With that?
I and a lady friend of mine, we decided that was the plan of the Jew. For them,
make
never
sure
forget.
You,
for us,
when
never
you're
remember.
On, when you're on with me on the program, make sure to write that down. Make sure you say that at least once, because I'm not even going to say that before that one's going to go to you, and you're going to get to state it the first time for the masses of people. Tens of thousands of people listening on 550 AM, 55KRC.com, live streaming. That just like with Jews we lose is something that, you know, we can use the mode of the enemy. You know, we have to use these slogans like make love, not war, all these things that you know, that they promoted to our people in these small, you know, and that's one way that the mantra thing is, you know, there is some scientific thing behind it, even though I don't agree with stopping short of the Jews. But you know, we can, with these slogans, I mean, how many people are going to remember that even if they don't necessarily agree with it? How many people? And then, you know, maybe they notice that, boy, this is the fifth Holocaust movie I've seen in the last year and a half. You know, I mean.
I think we should also point out that they want us to hate Muslims when they're in their own countries. When Muslims are in Iraq or Syria or Iran or wherever, we need to hate these people because they're evil terrorists. But when they come to Europe, when they come to America, when they come to any white country, then they become immediately the most loving, tolerant people there are. We have to accept them and embrace them. Otherwise, we are a hater. But if you hate those stupid Muslims when they're in their own country, you can join the U.S. military and go fight those evil Muztards. But when they're here,
I brought this up with you last time, and I don't want to be misunderstood because I didn't make myself clear enough. But I think if we can get to our people with this kind of argument, not saying that, you know, we need Muslims out and we need to stop fighting these wars for Jews against Muslims, but I think you could go to any citizen that has their mind beyond any kind of stupid-ass cat messing with a dog sleeping on the video on YouTube or some kind of, you know, nonsense with Miley Cyrus, anyone who has any kind of conception or cares at all about what's going on in the world, and we can tell them that, you may be pro-diversity or you may be pro-Israel, but it is absolutely the policy of people who are fundamentally have a purposeful program of destruction for our country in the West, that it is absolutely insane to both champion a pro-Israel policy that pisses off these Muslims and at the same time allow them to come here. That not a white nationalist policy, that it's not my policy or your policy that we need to get the Muslims out and we need to stop fighting these wars. But that anyone that wasn't completely in a mode of destruction of white nations, and that is the Jew, only a Jew could champion the policy of having pro-Israel, United States of America, fighting these Muslims, making these enemies, and then bringing them here. And who do we bring here? We bring people who betray their own people. You have John McCain insisting that we have to bring back these people who, was it in Iran or Iraq or Syria that stood up against them? And how loyal are they going to be to our country coming over here when they just betrayed their own country? Yeah, as if even if we had their loyalty, as if we'd want them here. But I think that is something, just like the pro-Israel policy in itself is something that the American people are never prompted to think about, the actual pros and cons. They're just given this blanket thing saying they're our ally, and it's never prompted to think about why. They're never, let's not even mention the attack on the USS Liberty, the spying, this backlash we get from the Muslim world. But to put it to them and say, let's have Mitch McConnell or anyone else try to justify putting all this support behind Israel, having the bombs dropped on the Palestinians and other Muslims, paid for by U.S. government, and then say, okay, let's bring those same people over here. Trying to make sense of that, Mitch McConnell.
Explain John McCain going over on Memorial Day in 2013, I think it was, and basically supporting ISIS and their allies in Syria, and then coming back home, and of course continuing his policy of pushing for amnesty and open borders in Arizona, and then finding out, oh, look, ISIS is going to cross our open borders. Are you kidding me? So we're funding and encouraging terrorists and anybody who wants to come over the southern border to do so, and just thinking that this is A-okay. Our politicians want to secure the borders of all these countries in the Middle East, but think that securing our southern border is racist and mean.
These politicians know nothing else but to say how high when the Jews say jump. I mean, it's, you know, and we have to realize that, you know, these people might be in high positions of power, but they are not like great European leaders and even American leaders of hundreds of years ago that attained their power and position through showing their ability to lead, and whether it be on a battlefield or otherwise, being great statesmen. These are skilled actors, liars. They are so weak. Especially this guy that I'm facing, Mitch McConnell. This guy won't even appear in public. He finally agreed to do a debate with this Allison Lunderman Grimes, the Democrat that's facing him. that's also one of my opponents, to do a debate but have no audience there. You want to know how fixed the system is. I actually went through not expecting, obviously, to be included, but I did, so I can now go to the public and say that I was excluded, as they're also excluding the Libertarian candidate here in the state as well from the debate, that I got sent a thing from KET. You want to know how fixed this system is and why, you know, and how manipulated and how this big party system works, that KET's policy, which is Kentucky Educational Television, the station that's going to be putting on the debates and putting it together, requires that anyone has a few conditions, four conditions. One was you have to be polling at 10% in a reputable poll, but they had another, I think the Libertarian candidate here is polling something at 8%, fell just short of that. You have to be in receipt of $100,000 of campaign donations to be accepted and to qualify as part of the debate. So you could be polling at 20%, and if you don't accept, if you haven't been the recipient of $100,000 of campaign funds, that you are not regarded as legitimate by the people putting together this debate for U.S. Senate here in Kentucky.
Yeah,
that just shows you how, you know, that they want to exclude not only, you know, pro-white candidates like myself, but even libertarians here. I mean, you had a libertarian candidate, and this is on a local level, that I actually met at one of the county fairs, real nice guy, and I had an open discussion about with him. Actually, I hope this actually doesn't, I wasn't going to mention this, but, you know, being on Raceless Radio, hopefully it won't get back to him as a candidate. I won't even mention his name. But, you know, a guy that was, you know, really nice guy, libertarian. Not to say I'm in agreement with all libertarians. I think, you know, we need strong action against these creeps that are running against us. We can't just hope to just let everything be and let, you know, whatever. But the fact of the matter is that he got on the ballot, you know, just like I could have went and tried to get 5,000 signatures. But you see how these creeps, even on a local level, act. He was running for county attorney, and this guy filed a lawsuit. And there's actually another libertarian candidate that had a lawsuit filed against him trying to question whether or not they are eligible for the ballot. They got this guy disqualified because they said that he wasn't registered as a lawyer in Kentucky. He was a retired lawyer from Michigan. Rather than this Republican that was running for county attorney, now unopposed as he was before, doesn't want a campaign, doesn't want to go out there and run a campaign. He'd rather go file a lawsuit to get this guy off the ballot. You know, so it just shows you how it's all trickled down. This corruption and this entitlement that these leaders have, and when you have $100,000, I mean, it just shows you how, you know, again, with this campaign, I want to stress, and votes or winning the election shouldn't be the barometer that we use to judge pro-white candidates. Not only myself, I was just saying it, but I read something online today that said something about possibly Paul Fromm in Canada, a longtime Canadian activist, probably the most distinguished one that there's been, possibly running for mayor in his neck of the woods there in Canada. And we shouldn't judge. Yeah, we shouldn't judge. I think there's two things that's important that we shouldn't flush too many resources as far as money toward these campaigns when we don't have the chance of winning, but that we should see that there's a huge amount of gain. And that more than anything else, we start to give ourselves a different level of legitimacy. Even if we can't win through the system, the public that we can reach through this is going to see us as a little bit more real than we would be if we were just limited to the Internet. And we can direct them to the Internet, show them this huge amount of work and action that's being done and people that are awake, and they can see that they're not alone. And hopefully, you know, get them active in some mode. Like I said, my goal is after this campaign, you know, who knows how many votes I'll get, but I'll be happy if there's, you know, 500, 1,000, 1,500 more people that find their way to a white nationalist website, to this network, you know, whatever. I mean, it's something better than doing nothing. And what is the downside in not making an effort to do something of this nature? I've never understood this whole, like, there was someone on there already today that was saying that the town that Mr. Fromm's running in is 45% white in Canada. I don't know exactly where this is, but he was like kind of giving him grief about it. I don't think it was actually even Paul Fromm that made the post. It was someone else. But
That's
the point I made. I said, you know, those whites are going to be more in tune with what it's like to live around non-whites in a white suburb where they don't have any experience. But these people, some of these folks are just pessimistic to the point where it's like any kind of action. It's like, why are you involved in this then? Why do you even care enough to come here if it's just one big bitch fest and that's it?
Well, I think we still have Tom Bowie on the line. Tom, are you there? Anything else you want to add after listening to the last part of the conversation here?
It looks like he has more bases covered than he could mention in this in just 2 hours. It's an astounding amount I've heard.
Well, thank you, sir. I take this fight and the struggle, just put it at the utmost seriousness and professionalism, and I don't half-ass anything. Sometimes I kind of look at what I'm doing, and I'm very critical of myself, as far as just staying active. There's been time, whether it was back when I was with the Alliance, and just keeping up a certain level of activity. And sometimes I sit there and think, it's like, wait, you know, a lot of people don't do anything here. Well, I mean, anything you do, it's like, you know, but it's like I've tried since the beginning to really, you know, I have so much respect for people like Dr. Pearson Rockwell when you live this cause, you try to do everything you can to present it in a way that people can be proud of, and that we can, like I said, I'm all about power. This isn't about trying to get a certain group of people together, or just a cult kind of thing, or just have our little rebel group here. I mean, we need to shoot for the absolute pinnacle, which is the power and having the ability to change things. And I think that we can only do that if we have just the utmost preparation and knowledge, and we try to cover all our bases. There's certainly things that I could improve on myself, and that I'm going to, just be just such a stickler when it comes up to this. Not only these radio shows, but I've got something this weekend or during this week that, like I said, is going to be more than these shows, and just something that truly came as a surprise to me that I'm going to be able to take part in. And I need to go there and do a proper job. I mean, it's just we don't have, I hope to, I don't know. I just don't have this this idea that we've got this all the time in the world. I really believe, I think what drives me more than anything else, I really believe these people can be beaten, and that honestly, it's not something that, I think that, what drives me is the idea of being able to at least see the beginning of the birth of a better world,
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we all have to be motivated to do. We have to know that as Dr. Pierce said once in an ADV, that all these, it's so discouraging when we have just our people just seeming just so befuddled, just utterly befuddled. But we have to know that everyone out there is sort of pretending, and they don't have any real loyalty to the system. It's more just kind of a, you have to go along, we have to be more focused on ourselves than the enemy. And when we focus on ourselves, we need to make sure we have the utmost attention put to our presentation, and that we don't half-ass this stuff, that we don't just go out there on emotion. Because, I mean, if I was going out there on emotion, I would be just telling all these people, wake the hell up, what the hell, because, like I said, I don't want to underestimate how angry I am about what's going on. And like I said, I'll be the first to say that, that our people, more than anything else, more than the Jews even, are responsible, because we have tolerated it. But we're never going to go to our people in a negative way. I think we can be truthful, and I think I'm going to be during this campaign and say, it's up to us, but I'm going to do it in a way that's inspiring and not, they're demoralized enough. Our people are demoralized enough.
And we need to have some measure of sympathy for the fact that we've been, you know, we can be angry at, you know, World War II veterans for going over there and fighting to ensure that Jewish supremacism was unchallenged. But, you know, we have to know that is that going to result in a positive for getting people on our side? And we have to get people on our side to get what? Power. And that's what we have to have. Because I, as much as I want to see our people once again put on an upward path, damn it, I want to see these bastards, these aliens, these anti-whites, I want to see them be called to account. And I want to see the roles reversed, man. I want to see them be the ones that are fearful. You know, as many of our people are fearful right now, standing up, people have actually had to deal with their tyranny. You know, it's time for us to stand up and know that through our will and determination and refusal to come up anywhere short except for victory, that's the only thing that we rest at, that these people, you know, there was that scene in that movie, They Live, where that guy, you know, finds out and he shoots one of them and he says, you bastards die just like we do. And the fact is that we can have the same amount of power that these people have, and that we can be the masters. We can be the rulers. Now, we're not going to reign over people like they do. We're going to have racial separation. You know, these blacks are going to be, we're going to be released from this idea that we have to tolerate them and accommodate them, but they're going to have their own society, you know, and we're going to release ourselves, and they're, you know, they're going to be a lot better off. And, you know, but, you know, that we
don't have to be oppressed. They don't have to be oppressed by our racism anymore. They can just live like the true kings of Africa that they are, and not have to deal with the white devil. It'll be great. Well, yeah, I think that it's going to be people that are courageous, like you, Robert, and like Tom, who's on the line, who goes out there in Washington D.C. and delivers a pro-white message. It's people like this that are going to inspire other people to do similar things and to add their own creativity onto it and to help out and join together and to form, well, the White Guard. Whether or not they have a uniform that says White Guard on it, I think it's more of a mentality anyway.
And Tom, I'm sure you're probably the right same way. Kyle, you've made sacrifices, and this is just the mindset that I have, that I have absolutely no desire to live in a world that continually is run by Jews, where we see brave men who think they're fighting for something decent and for freedom go over to die. I'm not in any way interested in living in a world where we continually see our women attacked by these blacks on the street. I have no interest in seeing our morals, our values, our nature, our instincts be so twisted and turned, and the sickness of this society. What is in it for a white man who has a sense of decency, who has a sense of traditional, and who has a connection, and who sees a better world? It's like either you fight for what is better and hope that we can, at very least, in our own individual circumstances, establish a world where the future generations will not have to be subject to this, or what is the worst they can do? I mean, if you're eliminated, now, you know, and I'm not someone with a death wish. I don't want to be a martyr. You know, I want to see a better future there. You know, I want to remain free. You know, that's why, you know, this White Guard project is something that, more than anything, is going to stress discipline, because, you know, we can't go out there and expect this to be like a posse and pulling illegal crap and being stupid about it. But we can't have the guts, and we can't operate in a way where we can get away with a very provocative and a very courageous stand that's going to open our people's eyes, and we can still remain free. And this is going to be something that is a signal that, you know, you can pass all the laws you want, you can continue to promote this idea that blacks are so mistreated, you continue to promote this idea that blacks don't have any responsibility for their actions. You know what? Keep on doing it. We are establishing our own
order and our own, the foundations of it right here. And this is the kind of foundation you start. I mean, to have a society, you need to, and to have people on your side to build that society, you need to ensure them that you are able to give them something as good or better than what they have. Now, you know, we can't expect to do that by just being critical and just preaching ideology to them. Now, first thing we can do, I mean, we might not be able to help them with their mortgage. We may not be able to help them with, you know, money problems. I think in some ways, you know, another thing I'm going to be doing, Kyle, when I go forth with this campaign on the radio, you know, these creeps get paid $170,000 a year. I'm going to go forth and say I'm going to donate $140,000 a year, and we're going to put that into a fund for I've got it on one of the posts on the message board there on Stormfront and VNN that it would be put toward hypothetically if I were to be elected, and again going forth to the people listening saying, you know, I'm promoting a campaign, I know I'm not going to be making $170,000 to do this. But this is what I would legitimately do if I did win, put money toward a relief fund for white victims of violence. That's the next step. First we get out there, we help them. We can do that with the strength and courage and guts and the will to get out there as white men in a morally correct way, which it is immoral to not get out there and continue watching our women and our children be targeted. The moral thing is to get out there and stand for them as white men. And the fact of the matter is that that can only grow. Eventually, we need to get to the point where we can help. You know, why do white people not? Why would they not stand with white who were willing to stand up for a white victim of violence? Well, these banks and stuff, they set up funds to help people sometimes. Well, they're going to be afraid that the bank is going to pull their funding if that white person says, "Hey, I want this white advocate to stand for me." I don't know if you guys are following me here, but the fact is that if we can start supporting these white victims of violence, they are going to support us. And when these white victims who have every reason, you know, be on the, that they've got the pulpit to say to the society that I've been victimized due to your policies, and it's these guys that are coming to my aid. And you know how many more people are going to be more apt to see that we have a developing true resistance. This is something you can grab onto, touch. These are real people. These are real people that have a spirit in them to help and to help build something better. And, you know, it can really start to snowball then. And once we deal decisively with this whole psychological warfare and get people afraid of that, I'm telling you, once we're able to get through to our people that you've got to shake this brainwashing, it's not going to be easy. But once that happens, it's going to be the system that's going to be in a hell of a bad way trying to, to adjust to that. And, I mean, that is their big weapon. It's been so effective. But what else do they have? Like I said, they have been the unchallenged opponent. They've routed us because they haven't had anyone there credible to fight. I mean, these conservatives, yeah, right. What the hell kind of opposition have they presented that's been credible? None.
Well, we're running out of time here for the night. It's been almost 3 hours, and it's gone by very quickly. Tom, do you have anything else to add to the show tonight before we wrap it up here with Robert?
I think his campaign slogan is a meme that not only rolls off the tongue, it'll be something people remember and probably look up online.
Well, if you put in "Which Jews We Lose Ransdell," it's growing in his number of Google hits. So you're right already on that, Tom.
Well, Tom, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Thank you, sir.
All right, Robert, any final words for the audience tonight? Just please reiterate where people can listen to you on the radio and when, and anything else you'd like to remind them about concerning your campaign here for the U.S. Senate and beyond.
Well, about 10 o'clock next week, right when your show went into overtime this week, but just make sure I guess they distribute MP3s. They don't actually, but I'm going to be making sure that all these shows are recorded and I can actually buy them from the station. But, you know, listen live starting next week, 10 o'clock Sunday night on 5:50 a.m. There is an Android app, iHeartRadio, that you can get it on your phone and also live streaming on the station. I want people to listen in not only for that, but also to monitor, make sure I'm getting my money's worth, especially in the outset, because any kind of technical problems that they may have, I want to have addressed right at the beginning, and I want to be very firm with them at the beginning that I'm not going to accept any kind of shenanigans with, cutting in and out or any kind of, little Jew tricks or whatever that, I'm paying for this time and I'm expecting to get what I pay for. But next week, like I said, just know when you're listening that, this is not just the people who care and the people who are sensitive to what's going on and who have, these are going to be, and who perhaps have a little bit more time than the average white guy out there. And maybe care a little bit more, but there's plenty of whites out there who care to a certain extent, and we're going to be reaching them like never before next week. During this week as well, like I said, I'll be letting everyone know what I'm up to on Wednesday on that show, certainly. And then we'll see what the signs end up doing this first week getting those out. But again, whiteguard.us is the website, and again, Ransdell for U.S. Senate 2014. I'm not one of these black rappers or one of these, whatever, so it's not four, the number four. It's Ransdell for FOR U.S. Senate 2014 @yahoo.com.
Robert, fantastic. A quick correction on what I said earlier. Jamie Foxx did not play the character Shanae. That was Martin Lawrence. Jamie Foxx played the character Wanda. Yes, these amazing black actors do seem to always be put into these female roles.
You see some of these, didn't they once say actors that are still on shows for like a long time, Al Bundy or something, like he could, I guess he's finally on a show, but some of these actors, like they go for a long time after they've been on a show for a while. I mean, who the hell would star that guy in anything but just some kind of absolute comical laugh your ass off roll at how stupid they are after that. I mean, like I said, every time someone, and again, not to minimize the guy's statement, I'm just like, what a joke of a,
Robert, we are running out of time here, and I wanted to get a song in. Again, thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate you having here, and I know the audience enjoyed it as well.
Thank you for having me. All you guys out there, thanks for listening, and, we'll try maybe a recap at some point. But yeah, listen
White
for
Guard,
Kyle Sheffield.
Whiteguard.us.
Kyle's going to be on with me.
October 5th.
Yep.
Robert,
yes,
thanks so much. And thank you out there for listening. Really appreciate your support. And thanks to everybody who's donated and supported in any way. Stay tuned to RenegadeBroadcasting.com, and I'll be back next week.
There is growing golden light, flower unfolding behind the mirror of your eyes. If an angel could hold it in his polished white hand, I know he'd release it like a bird to the sky. Now you are a warrior who will conquer this land on a horse made of clouds. You'll scatter the sand. Some people say God is long dead, but I heard something inside you with my head to your chest. then all the wrong they say I have done, their lies a sea of million more just waiting to become. Then begin again.